Go.
All right, what is going on, everyone out there? Welcome to episode number 14 of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy, aka NES Ruler 22. As always, I am joined by my co-host, JP, aka Double Shot Jerry, and the man himself, Mood 616. So, got a full show for you guys tonight, as we always do, back to our usual schedule here, hopping into the news with good old JP. Then into answering you guys' questions and answering the question of the week, which is your top five favorite endings to any horror film. Doesn't have to be shocking endings or anything like that. It just has to be your favorite endings ever. Then we're hopping into a small mood swings with a new question. Then we'll hop into what we watched, and we'll end the show tonight with a review of Eaten Alive, which should
Toby
be
Hooper's Eaten Alive.
his second film. So
Yeah.
let's hop into it. Go ahead, JP.
Okay, first up we have the news, which I will get to in 1 second. Somebody didn't ask if we're going to continue the What We Watch segment, and because we didn't have it last week, obviously doing the franchise, and yeah, I'm pretty sure we're always going to have that segment. Seems like it's a good segment.
It always conjures up some pretty interesting talk, and for the amount of shitty films that we watch on a regular basis, it always helps.
Oh yeah.
So
I
first
mean,
up for the good.
no, that was nothing.
All right. So first up for the news, we have Hunchback of Notre Dame is becoming, or it's potentially becoming, a 8-part adaptation miniseries called Ugly, directed by Roland Joffé or something
Holy
like that.
fucking miniseries, man.
Yeah, right.
Seriously. Like, it's like every week, it's like, oh
Yep.
yeah, there's another miniseries coming out.
Yep.
So, did you guys hear that they're going to be making a TV miniseries out of a Serbian film?
Yeah, right.
Could you fucking imagine?
Yeah, well, he basically wants to, base it off of, I guess the story's going to begin with the birth of the boy to an aristocrat family. The boy is deformed and his family abandons him by the roadside in a basket, where he's discovered by a couple of traveling actors. They name him Ugly, and then it goes through adulthood and so forth. So it's basically the Hunchback of Notre Dame in a mini series. I don't know, it's not the worst idea, I guess. It's a story that hasn't been told recently in a big format that I can think of.
Yeah, I think it could be decent, I guess. I guess if it's just depending on budget and stuff, I guess, really.
Yeah,
Do,
he's hoping
did it
to.
say did it say who's going to be airing this?
No, I guess it did say something about the guy is going to pitch it at the, like, maybe like with that one film festival, Cannes or Cannes or whatever it's called.
Cans, yeah.
And he, hopes to go into production next year.
Interesting.
So some news after that. I found this news to be extremely awesome, and it really makes me want to get on the ball with catching up on this series. American Horror Story season 4
Yeah.
announced where they're setting their fourth season, because it is like an almost like an anthology series by, season
Yeah.
by season, where it's a different, setup and story each season.
My
And
favorite
this,
place, mine is a hospital.
yeah, this is carnival themed in the
Yeah.
50s, which just
Oh,
sounds awesome.
really?
Freaking awesome.
I totally didn't even know that. That's totally cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I think that's going to
Super
be
cool.
really, really cool. So I definitely want to watch the other three seasons.
Yeah,
I do own the first one on Blu-ray, and I need to get around to checking it out.
I know, I'm the same way. Like I'm very particular with my TV series. I have the first season too, and yeah, need to get around to checking that out. I keep hearing from people that I think the second season was a little more light than the first season. Is that the way it is?
I'm not sure. I think people were loving season 3, is what I understand.
Oh, okay, yeah, season three might have been the best one. Cool. I don't know. I think it's a pretty interesting premise for a TV series, though. Do it season by
Dude,
season.
Carnival is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that is one of the coolest settings ever.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And I guess like some character, or not characters, but actors are returning. So I'm pretty sure they've done that before or whatever, but they're playing like different characters, same actors, different characters.
I heard that was actually kind of a complaint with the series, really, was the, you know, the same actors going from season to season and just, you know, playing different people and stuff. It just kind of wasn't believable a little bit. Because I guess once you get to know these characters as, you know, who they are in one season, and then they carry over to season two or whatnot, I think that's... I can see where people are coming from that, with that.
Yeah.
So.
After that, we have the teaser trailer was released for Leprechaun Origins. We do not see the Leprechaun, but I was actually kind of, I wouldn't say impressed, but surprised at the look of the trailer.
Hmm.
I thought the trailer was dark. Shit.
Yeah, we were having this conversation. Go ahead.
It just, to me, it just didn't really do anything for me. I was like, yeah, I did kind of like the atmosphere of it. It was very, very dark, but it doesn't really give you anything. I mean, no, it's a teaser trailer, but it doesn't even, there's nothing there.
But it is exactly what it's supposed to be. It is a teaser trailer. It just teases a little bit, which it, you know, the film still has a while to go before it's released. This summer is not somewhere in the summer it's going to be released. I don't want anything else besides that. I might want a glimpse of the Leprechaun just so I know what I'm dealing with, but I almost think that it's a good thing that they're doing this. They're not really showing you too much. I just wanted to know what the film would look like, and I was satisfied with what I saw. It definitely doesn't look complete garbage from what I've seen. That's not much, but
you know what's gonna happen? The fucking Leprechaun is gonna look like the trolls in Troll 2.
No, me and JP
step down, like from the original Troll film.
Me and JP were having this conversation, and I brought up a point that I don't think he's gonna be like the Leprechaun we think that we picture in our mind with all the makeup and all the stuff. I think he's just gonna be like a little dude in a green suit with a beard. And looks like a normal little person in a leprechaun suit.
I think what you do to make it, if you want to really try to make a good leprechaun film, is you don't make him like a talking like Freddy type character. You make him like a creature that's more animalistic than human, and just a killing little fucking creature thing, like a monster almost. I think that's how you go about it. That's not what they're gonna do, obviously, but. I don't know. I like to be as optimistic as possible.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the thing is, yeah, we just don't have a clue what's going on with this Leprechaun film. But I think if they made the Leprechaun a cannibal, that would be super sick.
Yeah. Or vampire.
Or a vampire.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I think we should throw that out there right now. Vampircon is, it's trying to be made. There's a Indiegogo campaign. We'll throw the link in the description. Throw some cash at it if you want. I checked it yesterday. It's not doing very good at all. I mean, there's still like 40 days. And I think the problem is they're not talking to people. They're not letting people know. Nobody knows about it. You have to know about it if you're going to get money for it.
Yeah. The only people that like, really know about VampireCon is the like 30 people that listen to this podcast, I swear.
Yeah, and like, the other couple hundred that listen to Dread Central Live.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's kind of sad, though, because I think that, you know, if more people, you know, find out about this and actually get the campaign going and stuff, I think it could be an interesting film.
Well, I don't think it's like, the people's fault at all right now. I honestly think that the people producing the film are doing a bad job. That
For example,
sites out there like Bloody Disgusting, Shock to You Drop, I don't think either of them posted anything about it. I don't think anybody really did except for Dread Central. So you got to get it out there. You got to send a press release and get it to all the major horror sites and everybody you possibly can. Spread the word as much as possible. Use social media, which they started to. They have a Facebook page you can like. They have a Twitter account you can follow. But besides that, they're not doing much to really get the word out there, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, they should have had a full campaign before they even started up the the Indiegogo. You know what I'm saying? To get that stuff all going before you even start it, and then you got, 45 days? Or how long is the actual campaign? I looked at it, but I can't remember.
It's like 45 days.
Yeah, 45 days. So get all that stuff going. Hit up all these websites. I mean, we've been talking about it. You know, just get that shit out there, you know, and then start up your campaign. But, yeah, that's sad. Like, honestly, if this doesn't get made, you know, just because of the lack of motive, it almost seems like it's just, you know, here's this idea. We have this, you know, funny idea, but we're not going to, you know, fully roll with it. I mean, come on, man. VampireCon? That sounds fucking amazing. Well,
for the people who might have missed that episode, that is exact. It's from the original creator of the Leprechaun film. He wants to get Warwick Davis involved, so it pretty much is a Leprechaun sequel, except for he's bitten by a vampire, and it's now Vampircon. And I think it would be awesome if they tried to get some, like that little kid Alex from the first film, maybe get him in a cameo, like just something to tie it to the original series. Also, there is some cool behind-the-scenes photos on the Indiegogo page, which I found just completely fascinating, considering there is nothing behind the scenes about Leprechaun out there. There's no, you know, videos from the time, you know, like commentaries, really. There's no, like, information, really. So I just found that very interesting. Yeah, that's happening. Leprechaun, Vampircon, whatever. Vampircon could happen if they get the word out there more, because right now it's not going that way.
So basically what we're saying, people, go check out the campaign, and if you want to throw some cash towards it. I can't even remember what the whole deal was, you know, if you throw 5, 10,
there's
15.
So many different things. I mean, yeah. There's, I think, like, 50 might be, like, a signed Blu-ray, or it might be 75 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was something rather. But anyways, everybody knows what that deal is all about, but go check it out.
Yeah. After that, we have news that I know is going to excite moods for sure, probably Jeremy too, and myself. It's probably going to excite all of you out there. A Christmas horror story. This is going to be a holiday-themed, Christmas specifically, anthology horror film.
Oh,
filming
nice.
Is underway in the foreign land of Toronto, Canada, as we speak, I believe.
Well, that's awesome. So it's obviously slated to come out during Christmas time then? So that's
it would make sense. So it's a Christmas horror story. It's an anthology. It's directed by a few people, some of the people involved with the Ginger Snaps films, specifically Ginger Snaps 2 and Ginger Snaps 3. It's going to be 4 segments. The first segment is supposed to be about some small town where something less festive is happening at a festival. The second tale is going to be a mysterious disease sweeps across the North Pole, transforming Santa's elves into ravenous, flesh-eating undead, and Santa and his missus wage a desperate battle for survival. It's going to be like a zombie elf tale. And then they do have the other two tales. There's the Krampus, which is, you know, the, like, evil, like, demon holiday thing. And then the third one is something about people looking for a Christmas tree, and they end up going on to some crazy guy's land or something. So, yeah, it's going to be interweaving tales from what I hear. It sounds fucking awesome. I love Christmas. I love anthologies. I love the idea of a holiday-themed anthology. Another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super sick, man. That just sounds so inviting. Can't go wrong. All those little storylines sound
awesome.
Sweet, man. They sound too super sick, man. Super sick.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds like something to keep on everybody's radar, guys.
Yeah.
Nice.
After that, we have the documentary for Hellraiser 1 and Hellraiser 2. Completed its filming in the UK portion of the documentary. Now they're going to be moving to the United States to interview Clive Barker and Tony Randall. So, it's just going to be a documentary on the Hellraiser films called Leviathan. They got the makeup guys and the Doug Bradley and everybody. Should be fun, you know?
Yeah, man.
That sounds cool.
It sounds fucking awesome, man.
Yeah.
As I see Jeremy looking at his tea bottle, what is your drink of choice today, guys?
Always my drink of choice. Cold Peak tea, unsweet. Yes.
You got to get the peach, man. Got to get the peach.
Nah.
Or the raspberry.
Unsweet.
Yeah.
This will change in about 12 days when Moods is here. It'll all be just fun Coronas.
Yeah. What are you drinking there, JP?
Budweiser.
Oh, that is a Bud. Nice. And I actually am not drinking anything. I just finished up a Tim Hortons steep tea because I'm from the foreign land of Canada. From the foreign land of Canada. So
yeah,
I just finished it. So I'm all hopped up on caffeine now, basically, is what it's coming down to.
Like I said,
and I'm like hopped down on tiredness because it's like near midnight already.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. What else, JP?
What else? Well, we have. I figured I would just talk about this before the rumor mill starts getting like insane, because this happens anytime Friday the 13th is talked about.
Tom Savini.
Yeah, allegedly, this is from Bloody Disgusting, who tracked this down and found out the truth. Tom Savini was at Mad Monster Party in North Carolina, and allegedly he was telling people that he's being courted to direct the next Friday the 13th film. They've later found out through their means that this is absolutely not true. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Running his mouth again.
How did that even get, like, what?
Like, he was probably just fucking around because he knows how fans react, and that's exactly what happened.
I mean, the second you put, you know, Tom Savini in the same sentence as Friday the 13th, yeah, that shit's going to spread like wild fucking fire. That's pretty funny, actually. But could you imagine if he actually did direct the sequel?
It would be terrible.
Or a new one. It'd be like...
Tom Savini is not a director, man. I mean, he did Night of the Living Dead, but I guarantee you George was involved a lot with that. A couple other things like Wet Dreams and Theater Bazaar, I didn't think that was very good. And he also did a segment in Dead Time Stories, which is awful. I don't think Tom Savini is a director. He's awesome at what he does, but I just don't think it.
I agree. The segment in Theater Bazaar was not good at all. It was very kind of bland and actually boring.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad, but yeah.
After that, we have Amityville. Yep. A new Amityville film, of course, you know, why not? When found is there footage. Not a new Amityville film? Well,
they seem to put out one like almost every year now.
Well, there's so many that you don't even know if they're part of the series anymore. You know, like which one counts?
Well, this one isn't supposed to come out this year. I think it's supposed to come out next year.
I think honestly, like, you know, when they did the Amityville remake, all the Amityville films that came out after, I think, were supposed to be linked to the original franchise. I think that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
There's nothing actually linked to the you know, there's nothing, you know, linked to the remake as a new franchise or whatever. But
yeah,
it's weird. They just keep kind of making these films every kind of couple years or whatever, these found footage and Amityville Haunting and all this crazy shit, but linked to the original franchise. That's so bizarre.
I think one of the problems is that Amityville is like not like a copyrighted term, so like anybody can use like Amityville in their movie, I think, or at least a lot of people can, because there's definitely like crazy Amityville movies out there that have nothing to do with Amityville.
That's definitely probably true, because yeah, look at how many keep coming out. There's one like every year. It's like Saw.
This one's interesting though, Moods, because it's going to be directed by the guy who directed the Maniac remake.
Oh, Mr. Jeremy's the Moods guy now, or the news guy now, I guess.
Sorry, I just remember reading this online. You can go ahead, JP.
No, go ahead. Finish up.
Be directed. It's going to be directed by the guy from who directed the Maniac remake. It's going to be starring that freaking main star from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, freaking Jennifer Jason Leigh, I think that's her name, who is the main lead in Fast Times, and it's going to have some Disney Channel new sensation lady girl in it as well.
It's a younger girl, I think.
And it's supposed to be like move into the Amityville house and they figure out the dark secret. It's supposed to be like shot and found footage.
Mm-mm. Well, that's the thing. That's the one detail you got wrong. Originally, it was titled Amityville Horror, The Lost Tapes, and allegedly, you know, found footage. It looks like the found footage angle has been dropped. Yes.
Huh.
Distribute it. It's coming out January 2nd, 2015 by Dimension and Time Warner Cable, I think that is.
Has anybody actually seen the last couple Amityville films? I know there was Haunting. I know there was like
that. Hell no. I've only seen two of them in the remake.
Well, I'm going to talk about one aspect of it in my
documentary.
Well, yeah, I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah, I have actually never seen past episode the fourth one. I've never seen like all those middle ones and these newer ones that are coming. I've never seen any of them, but just curious because it doesn't seem like they're very popular. So
after that, we have The Grudge is being remade. The English Grudge is being remade.
The Grudge is a fucking remake.
Yeah, but now it's getting remade again.
The English one is being remade.
it's being the remake. The English remake of the original is being remade again.
What the fuck is going on? But
It's a paradox, dude. We're gonna fuck up the space-time continuum.
Yeah. that's just getting ridiculous. Come on.
It's really? done by Joe Staus.
Remade? Like, come on.
Trying to relaunch the franchise. I don't even think the first Grudge was very good, the English one. So I'm definitely not interested in this.
Yeah, I'm honestly wasn't a fan. I actually never even seen this. There was, what, three English films?
Yeah, I've only seen the first one, too.
I've never seen the sequels, I don't think.
And finally, for the news this week, we have Scream Factory announcing Leviathan coming to Blu-ray for the first time this August, part of their Summer of Fear. They did state also that they have one more announcement. They say it's going to be a decent one. So that'll wrap up the summer lineup for Scream Factory releases. And Moods, I know you had some DVD releases.
This Tuesday, March, what is Tuesday, March 25th? Be on the lookout for, well, the ones that I'm looking forward to this Tuesday is the Scream Factory release of Beneath. So stay tuned on Beneath. I mean, it's a film that I know nothing about. It's a brand new film by Scream Factory. So looking forward to checking that out. Also Miss 45 is coming to Blu-ray and DVD, which is absolutely amazing.
Is that a rape revenge film?
Miss 45, I actually don't know 100% if it is or not. I've never seen it, actually. So I've just heard a lot of different or interesting things about it. Like, people always kind of talk about it and say that, you know, it's decent and stuff. But I'm not actually 100% sure with the exact plot line to it. But I think it's all along those lines. Not a whole lot coming out this week, actually, to be honest. I know there's another film by the company that puts out, I think it's called Macabre. The company
did,
they put
did
out.
Did they do the Banshee chapter?
Yeah, they put out Banshee chapter and Inbred and stuff. The
Thompsons.
Yeah, and but they've got
Saturday
a new film.
Saturday Morning Massacre.
Yeah, they've got a new film coming out. They got a new film called The Conspiracy, which actually looks kind of cool. So, and then there's a bunch of other like some really bad looking films called Beast of the Bering Sea. It looks like a really bad CGI film. There's a couple exorcism films, an Exorcism of Evil. Ugh.
What?
The Appearing. I know. It's just like, what?
Come on. Terrible title.
I know. So, but no, those are really the main ones I was looking for this Tuesday was Beneath and Miss 45 and stuff. So be on the lookout for those ones. Although there's another film with actually a pretty cool title called Psychopathic Tendencies. I mean, really, who doesn't want to watch a film called Psychopathic Tendencies? Come on. That sounds pretty cool. But yeah, this Tuesday kind of, it's not that action packed with releases. So, yeah. But
we'll be sure to talk about Beneath later on in the near future. I'm interested in that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an original. Was it a chiller film?
I'm not sure that one was, actually.
Yeah, I actually don't know if it was.
A lot of them are, but I don't think that one was.
Yeah.
Leviathan, actually, I like that release. I like that film. That's the one with Daniel Stern, right?
Leviathan's a good film. I was a little more surprised that, you know, that they're going to be releasing that, but, you know, it's a cool title for them to release, I guess. I mean,
I think it'll look good on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Hopefully.
All right.
So, yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's it for the releases.
All right. So, let's move into the questions that were asked this week over on our last episode and over on the Facebook page. If you guys haven't followed us over on Facebook, please do go search up the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror fan page and ask to be invited to the group. And we usually add you guys right away, go over there, lots of fun conversations and shit like that. So who wants to read the questions?
That group page is fantastic. I love it.
Yep.
Yeah, keep up the good work. It's very busy over there. Very active. I like it.
Very active. Are we doing the top fives or the questions first?
Questions.
Okay. Sure. So, not very many questions this week. Zach asks, what's our favorite Backwoods Cannibal movie? Gotta be Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind for cannibal films is always TCM and Cannibal Holocaust. Those are always the first two films that always come to my mind. Two of my favorite ones, anyways. If we want to look at something a little newer, I actually really, really enjoy Wrong Turn 2. I love
that's
film,
the
man.
Second I one mean, I thought of was Wrong Turn.
I meant, like, you know, if we want to get into, like, little newer films, but there's a lot, man. You know, cannibal films in general, not maybe this isn't really a backwoods one, but Ravenous is just a fantastic
Ravenous.
Cannibal film, man.
Shout out to my film professor for showing me that film, man. That movie fucking so good.
Yeah, I did. I'm so
fucking love that film.
I'm so excited for the Screen Factory release of that. That's just going to be outstanding.
It's such an underrated movie that nobody talks about, which is such
a
shame.
I've never even heard of it before this announcement. So
it's such a shame. It's such a fucking awesome film.
I think it's because the time it came out, like, you know, in the late 90s, like, horror was, I mean, well, especially cannibal films in the 90s, like, how many cannibal films can you really think of?
A Civil War cannibal film, nonetheless.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
The setting and the time, that film is just so unique. But
yeah, it's
I agree,
awesome.
Highly underrated. There's so many people who have never seen that film. It's just,
yeah,
it's crazy. So, yeah.
Sweet, sweet. Lost Witch asks us, a movie you want in your collection, but you can't seem to get. And this one was easy for me. It's Tales from the Hood. That's something I've been wanting forever. And
Clown House.
I can get it if I really, you know, wanted it, but I do want it. I just don't want to get that version because I have a feeling it'll get it, like Blu-ray, like as soon as I get it or something.
Yeah,
That was an easy question for me too. The very first thing that comes to my mind is Nightmare, the Code Red release of Nightmare. I just cannot find that film for a good price, man. I'm not paying.
We always talk about that.
Yeah, I just missed the boat on it when it came out, and it went out of print so quick, like it was. Wow. But yeah, that's definitely one I've wanted in my collection.
Yeah. Clown House for me.
That might be like tied for my Tales from the Hood one. I like Clown House, and it'd be awesome to have that film. And unfortunately, that one's probably one of the films that is like least likely to get a release.
Yeah.
You know, out of all the ones I can think of. Another film is Mosquito from 95. Ooh, I want that so much.
Yeah. You know, and it sucks too because, you know, the Clown House might not, you know, get a really good release again, but it sucks because it's an MGM film.
Yeah.
You know, you think that Scream Factory is, I mean, they've obviously probably looked into it because I know a lot of people have mentioned it, like even on the fan pages and stuff. And
Moods, there's a Nightmare on eBay right now for $34.99.
Also, I think that MGM might not even want to let somebody release it because it's still under their name too. It's just it's a touchy subject, man. I mean, the kid in the film, like, you're showing the kid that was molested, so it's kind of a little bit different than, you know, just because it came from Victor Crowley or fucking Victor Salva.
Victor Crowley, wow. Dude, that was awesome.
Victor Crowley.
Yeah, it's such a shame, but that would just be absolutely amazing if Scream Factory just all of a sudden one day just maybe that's their surprise announcement, Clown House.
Yeah,
but who knows? Crazy. That'd be cool.
And the last question from Corey Jones: What do you guys think is your favorite Alien ripoff movie? His is Creature. Mine is actually Leviathan.
Wow, favorite Alien ripoff film. I'd actually have to think about
it. Yeah.
there's actually so many of them, it's just ridiculous.
There is.
You know what, one film, what did he put? He said Creature?
Yeah.
Man, that's actually one of my favorite ones too, man. Roger Corman's Creature, it's such a campy, cheesy, low-budget film, man. That is a really good choice, that's a great one. Yeah, I don't know, man. Jeremy, you got one?
I'm looking at my movies trying to think of one.
Leviathan, I think... Actually, Leviathan really like plays on like a lot of the things that Alien was doing. Kind of, you know, the claustrophobia and some of that stuff. Towards the end, I remember really feeling like Alien-ish.
Yeah. Leviathan's such a good movie. Very cool stuff. I don't know, man. Creatures, like, honestly, the first thing, when you said Creature, I was like, totally. That's an interesting question.
Oh, I know one. Jason X.
No, Leprechaun in Space. Come on.
Please, no. That's just
well, oh man, I can't even think about that film anymore. But that is the questions for this week. I believe we're going to hop into the top five now, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Am All I right. reading them?
Are we right? going to read those first? Or?
Well, let's go yeah, with theirs first.
Yeah, we'll go with theirs. You can list them off.
Jack Rips coming in with, I believe, his first top
well,
five.
Well, first off, the question from last week was your top five horror film endings. And that was applying to everything. It didn't have to be a shock or a twist ending. It was just your personal favorite endings. So who knows? I mean, yeah, it doesn't matter what they are.
Yep, exactly. So Jack Rips coming in with, I think this was his first top five, right? I don't think he's participated before.
I don't know if Cody has that. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Number five, August Underground. Not nice. A huge fan of those films. Number four is Kill List. Number three is The Wicker Man. Number two is a Serbian film. And number one is The Original Maniac.
Nice. Interesting picks.
Yeah, it, definitely interesting. And ones that I wouldn't have expected, like maybe any of those, maybe Maniac. Emperor Corndog goes with number five, Halloween 78. Number four, The Shining. Number three, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Number two, Maniac. And number one, Evil Dead 2.
Cool.
Then we have Martin VP. Number five, Night of the Living Dead. Number four, Bedeviled, which I was surprised to see on there. You know, that's kind of an interesting newer film.
Yeah.
Number three is The Mist. Number two is Martyrs. Number one is... Fuck. El Laberinto... El Laberinto del Fiano. Fuck this.
Google Translate. Google Translate that. I'm actually not even 100% sure what that is either.
Yeah. I didn't even know. What's funny is I didn't even look at that until right now before I was about to read it. Like, I didn't pre-know that that was going to happen. Yeah. Zach comes in with number six, Frontiers. Number five, a Serbian film. Number four, Sleepaway Camp. Number three, the OG Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Number two, Martyrs. And number one, The Devil's Rejects.
Man, these lists are all so different.
Yeah,
they are. Then we have Andrew, and number five is Child's Play 2. Number four is The Devil's Rejects. Number three is April Fool's Day. He thought it was genius. Don't get the hate. Also, I forgot to mention, Zach said that he forgot Saw, so I don't know if he would have included that or not. Number two, Sleepaway Camp. Number one, Halloween. Then we have Lost Witch, who has number five, Maniac. Number four, Opera. Number three, Stage Fright. Number two, Evil Dead 2. And number one, Pieces, for the weirdest ending ever. then we have Rich over at thedevilseyes.com. He put April Fool's, the 80s one, at number five. Number four is The Mist. Number three is Valentine. Number two is My Bloody Valentine 3D. And number one is Buried. Then we have...
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Buried is a fucking awesome movie.
Then we have Andre. Number six, Sleepaway Camp. Number five, Halloween. Number four, Friday the 13th. Number three, Carrie. Number two, Nightmare on Elm Street, which surprises me anybody puts Elm Street on their list, because I find Elm Street, the original Elm Street's ending, to be like kind of bad.
Yeah, it's...
Like, it's the yeah. only problem I have with the original Elm Street. Like, the only one. And then number one is Halloween 4. And then also we have W Doubles, who has number five, A Nightmare on Elm Street, which, once again, surprised me. Number four, Friday the 13th, which also kind of surprises me. Because when I think of, like, my favorite endings, Friday the 13th isn't, you know, near it. But it apparently it's a lot of people's favorite ending because it pops up kind of frequently.
Yeah.
Number three is Sleepaway Camp, which also pops up frequently. Number two, Invasion of the Body Snatchers 78. And number one, OG Psycho.
Yeah, that's a great...
And that's all of them. Psycho, great choice, man. Sleepaway Camp, great choice. There's a lot of great choices on there.
All right, so you guys want to get into your list?
Yeah, I have a feeling sure. my list is going to be kind of different.
All right, you can go.
Me?
Yeah.
All right, number five is Halloween 3. I love the way it just ends. It just ends and you're like, dang. I love the ambiguity of it. Number four, Sleepaway Camp. Of course. I mean, it's one of the most shocking endings ever in horror. Number three, also one of the most shocking endings in horror, The Mist. Number two, Saw, just for the cleverness of it, and just it was one of the films that genuinely like surprised me, and I never would have saw coming. And then number one is a film that just simply is scary as fuck for an ending, and it's The Blair Witch Project. I think it's the greatest ending that I've ever seen personally. It just ends absolutely perfectly for the film. I know a lot of people would disagree, but it's my favorite ending.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess I'll go. Man, this was so hard. Like
it was there's pulling, so many good ones. Psycho.
I was pulling Seven. Things out and, you know, putting things in the top five, and I was like listing off films like, you know, ones that didn't make my list, you know, that I love is like, you know, Rosemary's Baby, you know, The Mist, you mentioned The Mist, The Wicker Man. It's crazy. I love the ending to Inside. It's crazy. But yeah, anyways, getting into the top five here. Now this was, this might actually kind of shock some people, but I really love this movie. And I think the ending was just like, phew, wow. And that's a Serbian film. Wow. The ending is so fucked up. Like, it's just crazy shit, but it's so memorable because yeah, I obviously not going to say anything. Number four is Cemetery Man. I got to say, Cemetery Man has probably one of the most bizarre endings to a film ever. Like, it leaves you going, what the fuck?
So far, which two films I have not seen.
Yeah. Number three, Sleepaway Camp, for the sheer memorability of that ending.
Like it's
almost
like you
so
have
good.
To include it.
No, it's just, I'll never forget the first time I watched Sleepaway Camp back in
the
Did
like, it
movies.
Actually creep you out, dude? Because it creeped
I was
the
like,
fuck out of me.
I was like,
oh my God,
I remember saying that girl has a penis. I was so confused.
Well, my exact experience of it. Well, you just fucking despoiled the hell out of Sleepaway Camp.
Well, yeah. I'm pretty sure everybody has seen Sleepaway Camp.
Well, what's funny is I just seen Sleepaway Camp for the first time a couple years ago. But I was chilling on a couch. Well, it was like 5 years ago. But I was like chilling on a couch and I didn't even notice it at first. I just saw her face and I was like, oh, that's creepy. And then I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, the thing that always creeped me out is like. The boy that they used in that scene, like, he's kind of like, you know, he's not built or anything, but it's just so noticeable that it's like
yeah.
a man's body. You know what I'm saying?
What is the term for that? Like, superimposed or something?
Yeah, like very imposed or
and
whatever.
I think that made it even more creepy. Like, just
oh,
the
totally.
Way it was
totally.
Like
Every
unnatural.
Time I watch that film, I look at it, it makes me laugh now. I'm just like, that's so funny.
I think we need to talk about the Sleepaway Camp films in the future.
Yeah, it would be a cool one. All right, so number two is Lucio Fulci's The Beyond. I think The Beyond has one of the fucking coolest endings ever to a film.
Again,
it's just
something I haven't seen. Damn it.
Man, it's
missing all these good endings.
The ending to The Beyond is just so well done, and the atmosphere is probably the coolest thing ever. And my number one ending, which I was very, very surprised that nobody had this on their list out of all the lists that we read, because it is my personal top favorite ending, and I've talked about this before, and that's Black Christmas. I fucking love the way that movie
Yeah,
goes.
I knew that
the way, the way the credits one. Roll and like just the way the atmosphere. Oh man, that shit haunts me, man. I think that ending is just not to be fucked with.
Dude, we honestly could do a whole show just on endings. Like,
oh, yeah.
I was thinking Return of the Living Dead and just so many good ones
oh,
out there.
Dude,
I was thinking
Dead
Scream for
laugh.
The end scene, but
yeah.
not really the actual ending.
Yeah, I put a bunch of notable films like on, you know, on a list, and Scream actually made it because I think Scream has a very interesting and very cool ending. I think the whole
yeah.
end is just very
Yeah, weird. I love it's one of my favorite end scenes, like final acts ever.
Mm-hmm. And like I had like Killer Party on there because I love the end of Killer Party. Like the last basically 20 minutes of the film is just it's so fucking cool, man. It's just cool. I definitely won't say anything else about that one because I know people haven't seen that one.
If we was doing worst endings, it would be my number one that I could think of.
What's that?
It.
It? Oh yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's such a letdown. Yeah, there's so many.
Yeah, that would actually be an interesting list to compile and hear other people's thoughts on their most hated endings. That would be actually kind of an interesting one, because there is some really poor. Like, you know what I hate? When you watch a film and then it's all good and then the ending comes and you're just like, that actually hurt the film for me. You know, I'm just like, yeah. You can't stop thinking about the piss poor ending. Fuck, I hate that, man. Sucks. All right, Jeremy.
All right. So, my number 5 is Gutterballs, which is just an interesting ending, fun ending. Nice. Number 4, Maniac. Number 3, Child's Play 2, of course, which is the most memorable ending of the series. Number 2, Saw, which I'm on the same boat with JP. And number 1 is The Mist. I fucking love the ending to that movie. I think it's awesome.
Honestly, if I was thinking the best ending, I might put The Mist. But these are my favorite endings.
Mm-hmm. You know what's funny? Different. I actually had The Mist in my top 5 spot, and I took it out and put a Serbian film in there. The Mist ending, I love it so much. I know so many people just shit on that ending when that movie came out. I was like, are you kidding me? It was awesome.
Anybody so I have ever showed The Mist has always had a emotional reaction. It's never just like, huh. Like, it's, you're always, if you're in the movie at all, like, invested into it, the tiniest bit, you're going to fucking be mind-blown at the end.
Oh, totally, dude. I'll never forget the first time I watched that one, too. I was like, wow. You know, like, holy crap. But that's what an ending should do to you, man. Like, that's really, truly, you know, an ending that does give.
And what's even,
you know, honestly, if you don't get, you know, a little bit emotionally kind of like, you know, like, holy shit, there's something fucking wrong with you, man.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty fucking, yeah, it's crazy. So.
Yeah, and what's even crazy is it's not even the ending from the original story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. So, yeah, that's our things. What about next week?
Next week, the question for next week, and this was actually stemming from a conversation I was having with a guy at work, because he was asking me about, you know, like new zombie films. And I was like, you know, we got talking about zombie films in general and, you know, how the zombie genres come so watered down. And like, I mean, there's 26 zombie films released every week, you know, and they're very fucking hit and miss. You know, some of them are good. I will give props to some good newer zombie films, but a lot are very watered down and kind of cliched and just boring. So he asked me, he's like, and he was telling me his favorite zombie films and stuff. And pretty much everything that he had listed off was like pre-2000, you know. And I was like, yeah, you know, pretty much all my, like, two of my favorite movies ever made are zombie films. And he's like, well, can you recommend anything newer for like a really good zombie film? So from the 2000s. And I was like, perfect. You just gave me my question, buddy. So my question is for next week is your top 5 zombie films post-2000.
Now I got a question. Does Infected count, like 28 days later?
I mean, if you personally lump infection films into zombie films, sure, why not? I mean, I'm not going to be too strict with this, but yeah, I mean, in a way, it kind of is a zombie film, but it's, you know, some people will.
It's
argue
really
that,
the
but...
format. It's not just what it is, like what it's kind of the whole format of the film, and they're very similar. Just because they don't directly die and come back to life, it's a little tiny rule that differ. You know, is the difference.
Yeah, so the question is your top 5 zombie films post-2000, so pretty much the new era of zombie films. Yeah, and I was actually kind of thinking about it myself before, obviously, the cast and stuff, and I'm going, wow. You know, there is some good ones, and there's some really bad. Like, it's actually kind of a tough question. So, mm-hmm. I'm really going to have to actually
think about it. It is a hard one. Yeah, I'm thinking of, like, one or two off the top of my head, and I'm struggling a bit. So I'll definitely look into that. That's a good question, dude.
Cool. Yeah.
So, anything else from Mood Swings?
I believe convention talk.
You know, basically, in the light of, you know, Cinema Wasteland coming up, me and Jeremy are heading to Cinema Wasteland. We got in this discussion briefly before the cast tonight, and we were talking about, you know, convention and what are your guys' thoughts on, you know, autographs, like signing stuff. I personally, you know, I think the autographs has kind of gotten a little crazy with the prices now. It keeps kind of going up and up and stuff. But the way I look at it, though, is if you go to a table and meet, say, you know, fucking Lloyd Kaufman, and say you buy something, I think that basically, you know, getting an autograph for free at that point is probably not too far off. If you're not going to purchase anything, I can see, you know, paying some money for the autograph and whatnot. But that's just my thoughts. Like, if you're purchasing something there at the table, I think the autograph should technically be free because, you know, you are supporting them too. But that's just my thoughts.
At least a smaller charge.
Exactly. Or a smaller charge. But, like, this is crazy, you know, charging $30 for autographs and stuff. And, you know, you go and buy some kind of swag from their table and then they're still charging you $30. Like, holy shit, man. It adds up, man.
Yeah, I never buy any swag. I just fucking bring my own shit. So I understand paying for that kind of stuff, but, like, I totally get what you're saying.
But, yeah, I mean, if I was at the Troma table and they had a movie that I didn't have, I'd probably just buy that shit, you know.
Dumpster Babies.
Yeah, so if they had a copy of Dumpster Baby, I'd totally just grab it from the table. But generally, you know, I think most people do have an idea of what they want to get signed, and they bring generally their own copies of things like your Laserdisc signed and certain DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think most people are going to bring their own stuff. So, but who knows?
Mm-hmm. And that's what they're there for. They don't fucking come, you know, some stuff, you know, they kind of come to meet us, but, like, you know, they're there to make money too, you know, so I totally understand, you know, charging to get shit signed.
Yeah, that's like, I've never been to a convention or anything, but I never really understood the complaints about charging for autographs, because you don't have to buy it. They're not forcing you to buy an autograph, you know. Just if you don't want to pay that money for it, then just don't. I think they're, I mean, some of these people, you know, they've been in one film and they're, you know, they're still riding that. And I, like, a lot of people like kind of clown on people for that, but I don't really think it's like a big deal. Like, let them have that, man. Let them have that. Why can't they have that one little thing?
You know, like, I have nothing against, you know, charging for, you know, the autograph.
Linda Blair is just, you know,
I do think that the price
here, so
I do kind of have a problem with.
Don't get me started with Linda Blair, please.
I mean, Linda Blair charging.
No, that's not even that. It's not even that with fucking Linda fucking Blair. It's you go to her damn table and she talks to everybody for like 20 minutes and you're in line for like 7 hours because she doesn't shut the fuck up and just sign the shit. She has a full conversation with the person that she's talking to. It's just so annoying. And then she charges for an autograph. And then if you want a picture with her, you have to pay even more to get even just a picture with her. You know, most people, everybody I've met besides her, if you pay for an autograph, they'll love to take a picture with you for nothing. Besides Linda Blair, who charges you $25 just for a picture on top of the autograph.
See, I think that's highway robbery right there.
See,
man. That's crazy.
And then you say you knew somebody, Moods, who was like taking pictures and she was in the background and they made her delete the pictures.
Yeah. Oh.
Beyond the Realms.
They were talking about that a while back.
Jason and Horseball, they were actually telling a story about this convention that they were at, and they actually witnessed this happen. It was fucking they were in line for Linda Blair, and a couple of the fans or whatever snapped pictures of Linda Blair, and she sent her goons into the crowd to, you know, get these pictures erased and stuff. And then they even had people thrown out too. I was like, holy fuck, that's so extreme.
I think we talked about,
like,
this on the cast before.
I think we might have, but I just was, I always remember that story because it's just, wow, that's some real shit right there. Like, you're getting pictures deleted, you're getting people tossed out.
She's like the only one that does it too, which is funny.
Man, when they were telling this story in one of their videos, they called Linda Blair a cunt like 40 times in this video. It was fucking
well
so
deserved,
funny.
In my opinion,
they were legitimately pissed off. And I that video was so genuine because they're just like, fuck Linda Blair.
Yeah, if the story they're telling, if it's true, which I have no reason to believe it's not, then
true.
She definitely is a cunt.
Yeah, and I feel bad giving her my $20, even though she doesn't keep any of the money. It all goes to her freaking animal rescue donation thing that she freaking is in charge of. So none of the money, she doesn't keep any of the money. It all goes to her charity.
I think it has to be fair to mention that too. Also, I think that, you know, you're not just paying for the autograph. You're paying for the opportunity to meet that person, which, you know, what's the value on that?
That's a valid point. I mean, nobody's forcing us to go up to the table and, you know, and fucking meet that person and shit like that. But, you know, there are certain people that just genuinely don't even charge for autographs. Like, Jeremy was telling me that Lloyd Kaufman generally doesn't charge for autographs. I was like, cool, man. You know, yeah. I think that's very noble. You know, he could be sitting there charging $20 an autograph, but he's not. You know, he simply isn't charging for it, which I totally respect. But I understand where people are coming from, too. You know, we're there to see them. And like you said, we're paying for the opportunity to meet them. So, you know.
But you also have to look at it like normally, like for someone like Lloyd Kaufman, I think he's there for different reasons than, you know, Spider from, you know, Return of Living Dead or whatever. You know what I mean? Like Lloyd's there.
I heard Lloyd doesn't charge.
Yeah, but he's there for different reasons too. Yeah. He's there to, you know, promote his trauma brand and sell his trauma stuff, and he's making money doing that.
Yeah.
You know, this dude's there, you know, because he was in Friday the 13th Part 5, you know, and he's trying to make some extra cash, living off of the little, you know, film that he had years ago. I think you also have to take that into account of what they're there for. And Lloyd Kaufman probably doesn't need to charge for his autograph because he's probably, him being there is probably selling, you know, so many trauma DVDs anyway.
See, everyone like talks about like people being dicks, like Tom Savini and everybody. I haven't met one mean person. Like everyone I've met has been like super chill. Like especially a lot of the Friday the 13th guys and ladies were, you know, like the nicest people.
I think another thing that it is even if it maybe isn't somebody being a dick, that they're so, if they just see them do something that is maybe not so bad under normal circumstances, but because they hold them in such a high light that the littlest thing can kind of, you know, make somebody upset who's really looks up to that person. It's really easy to kind of upset a fan instead of just, you know, some random person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Richard Boone was like the nicest guy I've like ever met in my life. Like he was this, it sucks that he died like, you know, like 6 months ago. He's like the nicest dude. Like, you'll actually find some pretty chill people that, you know, are willing to talk to you.
I've always heard, you know, the horror stories about, you know, Tom Savini being kind of a dick sometimes. But then I've heard a lot of people that have met him, they said he was really nice and he, you know, he treated him with all the respect in the world. Like, he was just happy to, you know, be talking to his fans and stuff. And I'm like, that's very interesting. So, I mean, obviously people do have bad days. Maybe some of these people met them on maybe the convention wasn't going very well and stuff, but yeah. For the most part, I've actually heard generally good things about Tom Savini. Yeah, you do hear those stories. But I mean, I think it comes down to the fact that people are kind of scared sometimes. Like, if you met one of your heroes and he turned out to be a total asshole, you'd probably look at him different.
It's so disheartening, man.
It'd be so disheartening because then
the thought of that, you're watching a film.
Like, honestly, if I met Lloyd Kaufman and he was like, oh, fuck, go fuck yourself, you know, something, I would be like, devastated, man, because I
think I'd punch Lloyd Kaufman in the face.
Lloyd Kaufman is the nicest fucking dude ever. Yeah,
But that's the thing, right? Like, I mean, it goes for anybody. Like, say you're meeting your favorite actor of all time. Say if I met Jeffrey Combs and he's just like, dude, fuck off.
Jeffrey Combs, I'd be like, nice too. I've met Jeffrey Combs.
I'd be like, oh, that sucks so bad. I mean, that just ruins the experience. And like, and now I look at Jeffrey Combs so different. So I think people, you know, are a little worried about that sometimes too. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's natural to be like that though.
Back to Tom Savini real quick. He actually, from my area. He's the hotel I work at. He has stayed at before.
Oh no, JP, right in the middle of your Tom Savini story. No, come on.
Well, that's,
oh wait,
you know, he might not be in a bad mood
and he's back.
Was I lagging?
Yes.
I actually just cut out there for a second, but whatever,
we didn't hear anything you said.
he's from my area, so he stayed at the hotel that I work at, not since I've been there, but when my cousin worked there, still works there. She said that, you know, he's kind of hard to read. Like, he seems like he could be like mean-ish, but not in the way like he's actually doing anything. He kind of just gives off that vibe to where like it seems like he could be kind of a mean guy, but I think it's just kind of the way he looks and just
I think Tom Savini's a little just maybe intimidating. Maybe
that's exactly it. She said he was nice when she talked to him. She didn't know who he was at first, but
man, I get that actually all the time in my personal life. People are like afraid to come up and talk to me and stuff because they're, I mean, I've heard from other people like you're very intimidating.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
that's what we always talk about. You know, that's why I was talking about my ma, and like you're gonna be funny with your earrings and your huge bushy mustache walking to my house the first time.
You should totally roll in with the biker stash.
and that's the thing. Like people that don't, you know, are meeting me for the first time, they're just like, oh man, dude, you're so intimidating. And then they get to know me and they're like, oh, he's just a big fucking teddy bear, really.
Yeah.
So I mean, but I do get it quite a bit, especially at work. I get it all the time. Like people will be boarding planes and stuff and looking over, and they're just like, "Oh, look at that guy." It's kind of funny, but I don't know. I can see where people are coming from with Tom Savini, though. You know, maybe it's just he does have a kind of a little bit of an intimidating look to him, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, just a facial features kind of deal, right? But yeah. So.
All right. Anything else about the convention circuits?
No, I think that pretty much wraps it up.
JP, is anybody going to be at that thing that you're going to at the end of April?
I have no idea. I probably not, but I'm going to be watching some awesome movies.
It's just a film festival, isn't it?
Well, it's just a drive-in showing, you know, horror films from.
Oh, it's actually a drive-in.
Yeah, it's a drive-in. It's a two-night event. They're showing Suspiria. All these are, you know, I think 16mm. Halloween
35mm.
Yeah, 35mm.
Yeah.
I'm bad with my millimeters. Carrie, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. I believe The Hills Have Eyes. A couple other ones. The Beast Within. I think like 8 movies.
That's a very cool lineup though, like The Beast Within and then Suspiria. That's totally random, but very cool though.
I've seen Halloween in 35mm, and it's an experience that it's definitely not something you should miss, because seeing the grainy
awesomeness
of Halloween is awesome.
I'm definitely one night. I'm not sure if I'm going to go for both nights, but the night that I'm going on, they're playing, I believe, Halloween, Phantasm.
Nice.
Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things and The Beast Within. I think those are the 4 for that day.
Nice.
So awesome, man.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah, it is. I'm excited. I'm really excited because I've not seen anything besides Halloween on digital a couple months ago, last October, and I've not seen any. I'm just so excited to see these classic films like in a drive-in. It's going to be so awesome.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Cool.
Yep. So, that was an interesting discussion about conventions and the circuits. You know, I bet you a lot of you guys, you know, have some of the same opinions that we do. So let us know what you guys think down below. And so let's move into the next segment, of course, which is what we watched. And we'll be talking about some films and then have a pick of the week. So who wants to start first?
I'll start.
Okay.
Yep.
The first thing I watched is actually not a movie, but since my what we watched is so short this week, I figured I'd throw it in. I've actually watched the second episode of From Dusk Till Dawn, the series, and I gotta say, I liked it more than the first episode, which I also liked, so honestly, it's kind of surprised me. It's pretty entertaining so far. It's much like the Bates Motel series, where you just have to get used to different characters playing these different actors playing these characters in different, you know, setting, and it's just a little different. And to most, to, you know, some like purists, it's gonna bother them a lot. But to me, I can look past that stuff, and I can kind of disconnect from the original series and kind of take it as its own thing. It's interesting that they kind of film it almost like they have like flashback scenes. Where they'll mention something like, oh, you shouldn't have, you know, started shooting everybody at the bank or something. Mm-hmm. And then it'll, you know, go a little bit. And then it'll eventually show that flashback, kind of almost like, you know, Tarantino-ish or something. Man, these characters are really, really fucking similar. Like, the guy who plays George Clooney's character is, I don't know who the hell else could do, like, a better George Clooney than that guy. It's insane. It really is kind of impressive. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the same story, though. It's just a longer version of it, and it's kind of a little different. But we've seen a vampire finally, and it's kind of cool, like how it kills somebody. It has these like fangs that come out, but it's like it's almost like a mosquito-ish thing. It's just weird. It's cool though. I really like it. It's way, way, way better than I was expecting. I had very, very low expectations based on the trailer and everything.
Yeah, I think I'll probably end up checking that out once it comes out on DVD and then drops down to $7.
My only piece of advice is disconnect. You have to disconnect the original film series.
Well, I kind of figured that you would probably have to do that. So yeah. I guess that makes sense, but yeah. It's just, man, I seriously cannot fucking believe how many TV shows are coming out. Like,
you know what, though, man? I kind of like it. I haven't had very many bad experiences with these things. Like, I love Bates Motel.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm very particular when it comes to TV shows. And, like, if I sit down and watch one episode, I pretty much have to watch, like, the entire season kind of thing. You know? And it's just, it takes a lot of time to get into these shows and stuff. Like, I still haven't even gotten into, you know, American Horror Story and stuff. But with all these other ones coming out that I want to check out, like, you keep saying Bates Motel is, you know, pretty good and stuff. And eventually I'm going to check it out. So it's just going to be, like, a lot of viewings. You know, it's going to be a lot of time put into this with all these TV shows. You know, it's just one after another.
Shows, man.
There's just one after another. It's crazy.
I have, like, 25 seasons of stuff that I have on DVD that I'm like struggling. I'm almost finally finished with Fresh Prince season 6.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's good to hear that From Dusk Till Dawn is actually, you know,
I mean, it's not amazing, but it does have some decent cinematography. There was a scene specifically where the RV, like I said, it's kind of similar. The RV with the family is going across, a road, and there's actually you see it and you kind of are watching it, and then you realize you're watching it through the reflection of a lake, and it's like, whoa, I thought I was looking at the real thing. You know, it looks good in certain spots. It's definitely way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's super inviting. I've really got to get on Bates Motel though, because remember we were talking about Bates Motel before, and I just couldn't get past the fact that it wasn't set like in the 50s, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the whole present day thing was kind of, but I actually just watched, you know, I was watching some YouTube videos and I caught, I think Mr. Cinema Junkie was talking about it. And at first he had the exact same thoughts as I did. He's like, why in the fuck isn't this movie or this TV series not set, you know, pre Psycho film? So basically late 40s, kind of 50s kind of deal as Norman Bates as a teenager. And he said, basically after one episode, he kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, you kind of do. And you know, another thing that helps is the motel is still traditional looking. The inside, the furniture, the fridge, it's all sort of old looking. So it definitely helps. You might have Norman Bates using a smartphone and shit, but
I know that cracks me up, man. That just totally cracks me up, but
yeah, you get used to it pretty fast.
Yeah, it's from what I've heard. So that's pretty interesting. Cool. Is that it for
Yeah, that's it for Dusk Till Dawn.
Cool. All
right, Moods, you're next.
All right, first one I want to talk about tonight is a film from, I don't know, either 2006 or 2007, and it's called Zombie Town. Speaking of, you know, new age zombie films, this is a pickup, a complete blind buy like I usually am, you know, with these type of films. I only picked up this film, and I know this is probably going to make David laugh, because it had zombie in the title. You know, I'm a sucker when it comes to films like Zombie or Massacre, Blood or Bloody. But, you know, I did read the synopsis before I picked it up, and I was like, you know what, it sounds kind of cool. It kind of reminded me of, like, almost like a Night of the Creeps kind of deal. But anyways, this movie's basically about these two mechanics that live in this small town. Basically, it's like a real small country town. You know, they're kind of secluded from, you know, the city life and stuff. And anyways, basically what happens is there's this zombie outbreak. And it comes down to these guys and their girlfriend and a couple other friends and stuff. They're trying to figure out exactly what the fuck is causing this, because there's no explanation for it. And she actually works in like this kind of this scientific lab kind of deal or whatnot. But anyways, they kind of find these, they're almost like slugs. It actually reminded me of the movie Slugs and a little bit of Night of the Creeps, with these little fucking slug things that are getting into like the water, and they're actually, you know, they're actually getting into people's bodies. And it's causing them to go, you know, fucking turn into zombies and shit. So they're trying to solve the mystery of what the hell's going on. And then once they kind of do figure out what's going on, then they have to kind of contain the situation and stuff. This movie was fucking awesome, man. I was like, this is the best thing about, you know, buying films, like straight up blind buys. I live for this, man. When I find a film like this, I'm expecting nothing out of it. It's very low budget, but it was done very well. The story was cool. The acting actually wasn't bad. The setting was really cool. The gore was well done. I was like, Jesus, it had all the elements that I wanted from this film. And, you know, going in with very low expectations helped, I guess. But, I really do recommend Zombie Town. It was a really fucking good film.
Was it better than Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town?
I haven't seen it. But, you know, I really like the whole premise of, you know, the zombie, like the way people are infected and turned into zombies was due to these like little slug things. It was very cool, man. And actually what they, and how they kind of kill them and stuff, the way they come up with the idea of, you know, the method of killing these things off was actually pretty funny too. It's not like a over the top zomcom. There is funny moments and stuff. It's not to be taken serious, but it's not like, you know, a ridiculous zomcom. It's actually really well written, so
who released it?
You know what? What's really weird? It's like some random company called like Edgewood Studios or something, or
fucking like, Edgewood.
Yeah, I know this release is like super low budget, but actually the transfer on this, pretty good, man. It's in full screen, but it actually looks really good, you know, for low budget film and stuff. But yeah, I recommend this one. I'd never even heard of it. Like I said, it was just I grabbed it because it literally had zombie in the title. Mm-hmm. So I do recommend it.
That's usually how I don't buy my movies. It has zombie in the title, I stay away from it.
Well, it's funny because I actually checked. I picked up another film at the same time I grabbed Zombie Town. I grabbed this one called The Zombie Farm. And it wasn't that good.
See? Yeah. It's like 9 out of 10 of those are like terrible.
Yeah. But Zombie Town. I don't know if you guys can find it or whatever. I do recommend giving it a watch. It's pretty fun.
You guys didn't give your ratings.
Oh, actually, if I had to rate
it. Well, mine Zombie was Town, a TV series, so.
Yeah.
If I had to rate it, I'd probably give it a solid, you know, probably 8 out of 10, you know.
Interesting.
Really?
Damn. Yeah, it was good. It was really good. I was really impressed with it. So.
To check it out. It's a way better rating than I'm going to give my first movie. All right. Talk about the 2013 release film called The Family, starring Tony Todd, Kane Hodder, and who else is in this? The guy from freaking Michael Berryman. So it's a pretty great three guys, but of course they're only in it for about 5 minutes at the ending. But film basically follows this family that likes to make these horror films, but they're actually snuff films. So it's basically them kidnapping people and making them, you know, turning them into actors on their snuff films. And, you know, there's a lot of commotion in the family, aka the title, between these two brothers who are running this this operation of making these snuff films. And it's so fucking stupid, and the acting is terrible. The acting between these two brothers are so fucking bad. They look like they're from Duck Dynasty, you know, they got long hair and beards, and, you know, they look just like, you know, like they're fucking idiots. And the way this one guy talks, he sounds like Batman, and it's just a stupid movie. With you know, it has a cool premise about this crazy family which revolves. Way to go, Moods.
Yeah, you sound like Jeremy right now, snapping cases and shit.
No, I just dropped. I just knocked over a stack of DVDs on the floor. Sorry, guys.
So, it had a cool premise. It's your typical crazy family film. But they add in the element of making snuff films. It has cool practical effects, I gotta give it that. No shitty CGI or anything like that. But I couldn't look past the acting, and I almost turned it off. But I sat through it, and the ending was, you know, way better than the entire film. But it did not save the film whatsoever. It's trash. It's put out by Green Apple Entertainment. Would not recommend it. I gave it like a 3 out of 10. It's definitely not on the level of Bloody Homecoming, but it's pretty fucking terrible, so I would not recommend it.
Nice.
Damn. I'll probably avoid that one.
Yeah.
The film that I watch is also not a very good one. This one is called Furnace from the year 2007. Had Drool in it.
And, Drool? Did you say Drool? Like the Drool. Rapper?
Yeah, Drool.
Ja Rule?
Ja Rule.
Oh, God. He's fucking horrendous.
And Paul Wall and Danny Trejo.
Oh, wow. That cast is just... okay.
Yeah, at least my cast in my movie was better than that.
Yeah. Drool and Paul Wall wasn't really in it that much. Danny Trejo wasn't really in it that much either, which I would like to see a little more of him. He's a pretty awesome dude. This one is just a terrible, like, ghost story set in a prison. It's not very entertaining, not very engaging. It's just one of those films where I'll kind of fade while watching it, and basically something will happen or a loud noise will happen. I'll be like, oh, yeah, what's happening? And I just fade out again until I see something cool, which doesn't happen very often. There was some okay gore scenes, but one of them was really bad. There was, like, this guy. It was, like, a dead body in, like, the morgue or something. Going through an autopsy, its chest was all open and stuff. And you can fucking see its stomach breathing. It's so bullshit, dude. Because it wasn't even like...
Dude,
it was
I've
like,
never been able to figure that out in films. When you're dead on screen and you notice someone's breathing, like, seriously, just hold your goddamn breath.
Yeah, I see that.
What the fucking 10 seconds? Like,
I see that all the time. No.
It wasn't. It was literally, it cut to it, and then it cut away in, like, 4 seconds. So it was literally, like you saw, like, it for a couple seconds, and it spread, like, twice during it. So they literally just was, like, didn't even notice that they was breathing. It was so, and it was like where the makeup was, it was like the upper chest, but you can see their belly moving up and down. It was like, are you serious?
I seriously cannot stand that. That drives me nuts.
And it wasn't just like a subtle thing. Like, it was a full blown, like, breathing.
Yeah.
There was like a little bit of okay gore. Danny Trejo is, of course, always a nice addition. That they did some slow-mo scenes, just something I noticed that in the film. They would do, like, weird slow-mo stuff, but it always looked choppy. I don't know. It was stupid. There's, like, this burnt ghost story of, like, you know, vengeance and stuff, somebody wrongly sent to death, or not really even that, just a vengeful spirit. Typical, like, prison-type ghost story, generic stuff. Like, I like the idea of films set in prisons, horror films specifically, you know, much like Prison, that one Scream Factory put out.
Yeah.
But this one is just, there's nothing, no reason to watch this film at all. I'm going to lower my rating from initially what I rated it. I was going to give it a 4, but after talking about it, I give it a 3.5.
3.5 out of 10? Wow.
I gave mine a 3.
I know, it's just, wow, those are really low ratings, guys.
The movie sucks cock. What do you expect me to give it? A good rating if it sucks?
No, I just, I think we got a whole pile of shitty films this week.
Luckily that was my only, like, shitty one, so.
Oh, I got 2 more coming.
Okay, so the next film that I watched, I hadn't watched this movie in years, and watching this film again just made me realize that it is literally one of the weirdest fucking movies I've ever seen in my life. And that is, I believe it's from 1980. Yeah, the original 1980, and that's The Pit. If you guys watch my unboxing video, I just got this from Jeremy. Just sent me this film. The Anchor Bay double feature with Hellgates. But yeah, The Pit from 1980.
Was it worth the $20 purchase?
Oh, fuck yeah, man. This movie's... it's just... Okay, let's get into it. It's about this boy named Sammy. He's like a 12-year-old boy. He's a total fucking outcast, man. Like, he's just a weird, weird kid. He gets bullied at school a lot, and he has this, like, really strange obsession with, like, sex. Like, he's 12 years old, and he's, like, constantly sending, like, his teachers, like, all these, like, weird, like, love notes and cutting out you know, her picture and put in her head, like, on a naked girl and stuff. And he's just always doing these, like, really randomly weird things at school and shit. And he's just a weird kid in general, like, the way he talks and the way he presents himself and stuff. But anyways, his best friend is a teddy bear that he has. And this teddy bear actually speaks to him. And it's, like, evil. It's, like, an evil teddy bear. And he, like, has conversations with this bear and stuff. Because, like I said, he has no friends. Everyone fucking thinks he's, like, the weirdest kid and shit. So, anyways. So, one day he's out playing in the backwoods behind his house and whatnot. And he comes across this pit. Like, this huge fucking hole in the ground. Like, in the middle of the
it's
forest.
It's in his backyard? Oh, I thought you said in his backyard.
Well, he's in the woods next to his house or whatever, but he's in the middle of the woods and there's like this massive hole in the ground. It's literally just a pit. Anyways, he looks into this pit and he sees these things, which are called troglodytes. And they kind of look, yeah, they're called troglodytes. And basically what they are, they're like
Who named them?
That's what they're, I don't know. That's just what they're called on here. It's fucking,
there's no discussion of like, hey, what do you think we should name it? Like that the kid just knows that's what they're called.
Yeah. It's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. So basically these things are like, apparently they're like prehistoric creatures that have survived millions of years and are like living
like graboids.
In this pit.
They talked about graboids and they was like, what should we name them?
Yeah.
They're not even going to name them.
So he soon realizes that, you know, or he wants to become friends with these things, but they're like stuck in this pit stuff because, you know, he's a lonely kid. And basically
so
what he starts doing is he starts feeding these troglodyte things.
Quit calling them that.
big fucking pieces of meat and shit. And he soon realizes that he can't keep this up, man. He's using all his money buying big hunks of meat and he's just going broke. So, you know, because he's 12 years old, he shouldn't even have any money. Anyways, so eventually he gets a smart ass idea to, you know, teach everybody that's, you know, picked on him in the past and stuff a lesson. And there's so many different sequences in the film where he's basically luring in like all these kids and stuff and adults and teachers and shit, people that have treated him wrong, and basically pushing them or making them fall into this pit and these troglodyte things fucking devour them. It's like scene after scene of this, and it's so funny.
This
sounds
so fucking awesome.
This movie is
so
good
luck finding a good price on it.
It's such a blast, man, and it's such a weird film. It's just like all over the fucking
place.
Yeah, dude, it's so many weird elements to it. But dude, I literally had to pause the movie. I was laughing so hard because there's this like 12-year-old little girl. She's like a little ginger kid. And he basically pushes her into this pit. And I started laughing so hard.
It's okay.
Like,
she don't have a soul.
Exactly, right? But just the way he did it. And some of the other sequences where he lures in people and they fall into these pits. It's just absolutely hilarious. And these troglodytes, they end up eventually getting out because he actually... He, you know, puts a rope down there and stuff, and then they go on this like, this movie's out of control. It's just, it's a really fucking bizarre film. There's
so
nothing...
I need to know one thing. What are these? What are these troglodytes?
They're basically like the explanation is they're like these prehistoric. They almost look like little trolls.
I mean, are they like
that? Would be the best description
I'm
could give.
I'm talking about like, are they like? Is it an effect? Is it like little people in costumes? What do they look like?
Yeah, they look like little people in costumes. So basically, okay. like the leprechaun, but with like a really mean kind of beast face.
Okay.
You know, they kind of, yeah, they have this like beasty look, but yeah, they're like little people in costumes and stuff. And it's just, this movie is so friggin' bizarre, man. There's so many elements to it. One of the creepiest things actually in the film, besides, you know, the kid being all weird and all this other weird shit going on, is the fact that he has a nanny, a live-in nanny. And he's like obsessed with her too. He's always trying to like look at her in the shower.
Did you try to molest one of these troglodytes?
No.
Surprisingly.
So he's like obsessed with his babysitter, basically what she is. She's like a nanny / babysitter kind of deal. And he's just taking showers and she's like running into the bathroom and like writing "I love you" on the mirrors and stuff and like all this weird shit. But there's this one really weird scene in the film where you got to remember Sammy's a 12-year-old boy. And he's getting a sponge bath from his, like, 18-year-old fucking nanny. I'm like, this whole scene is wrong.
Wait a minute.
This should not be happening right now. I'm like, what the hell? This kid's 12 years old. First of all, he shouldn't even be bathing anyways. He's fucking 12. But why is he getting a sponge bath from his nanny that's, like, only a few years older than he is? I'm like, this is fucking bizarre, man. I'm like, this is just out of control. There's so many weird elements to this film. You can ask anybody that's seen this movie. The first thing they say is just pure weirdness. You know, you can't describe this film. You know, You got to see it to believe it, man. It's one of those films you got to see to believe it. It's just whoever wrote this shit, man, was a fucking genius, because it's just it's so memorable. There's so many fucking memorable scenes and funny scenes in this film. Probably more, maybe intentional, but there is some unintentional things that are just absolutely hilarious too. But if I had to rate The Pit, man, I'd probably give it like a fuck, man. It's a good film, like 8.5, maybe 9 out of 10.
Really?
It's such a weird film.
I don't know what a troglodyte is. So
for like originality, like this movie is just one of the best, but definitely a gem. You know, if you can come across this, I think this is the only way to get The Pit, actually, is in this Anchor Bay double feature. Mm-hmm. But if you can ever come across this for
right a now, I'm price, thinking like The Gate mixed with like elves.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, man. It's like, the talking bear is so funny, man. Like the bear like tells him to do things. Oh, it's hilarious, man. It's so funny. And like, you know, he's like that total trouble kid, you know, like his teachers come over and tell his parents and yeah, I think your kid's a little fucked up. You know, and shit like that. It's so funny, man. I highly recommend The Pit. It's great. So much fun.
Sweet.
That sounds fun.
It is, man. It's just I can't even stop laughing about it.
It's honestly something that I have to see now, but it sucks that it's hard to find. I'll probably have to see it some other means, just because I'm really curious now.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, it's a different one.
All right. My turn. All right.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the movie I reviewed on Body Bags this week from 2011, starring Jason Mewes, called Silent But Deadly. All right. Now... Alright, this movie's funny. So, the movie basically starts off with these two lesbian Russian mail order brides screwing each other in this farm in the middle of bumblefuck nowhere. And Jason Mewes' character, who's a little bit of a man child, lives on this farm with his dad, who ordered these Russian hookers from wherever. And he gets caught peeking in on them. So. The father goes crazy, and he's determined to kill Jason Mewes' character. And Jason Mewes is going to leave before his father actually gets down there to kill him. But he leaves one of his goats behind, and he has this little sexual thing going on with these two goats that he has. You know, he loves these goats more than life itself. So he leaves one of these goats behind, and his father blows its head off with a shotgun, and some of the worst CGI I've ever seen in my life in any films. Not as bad as Hypercube 2, but it's pretty fucking...
Dude, Hypercube cannot be the worst CGI ever. Watch The Langoliers.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah, The Langoliers CGI is bad. It's bad.
I mean, it has been a long time since I've seen Cube 2, but I'm not imagining the worst CGI ever.
Mm-hmm. All right, so after he blows the head off of his goat, Jason Mewes kills his father and flees with the remaining goat that he loves. You know, he's freaking kissing this goat and all this shit. It's fucking weird. Jason Mewes does not say one word of dialogue throughout the entire film.
Are you serious?
Not one word. But he's
he's
the main actor. He's in the most. He's in just about the entire film. But he doesn't say one word at all throughout the entire film. So
I think that's a flaw, man. You got Jay in your movie. You got to make him say shit.
Yeah. So he flees, and he picks up this hitchhiker on the side of the road who ends up working on a film set in this little town. So he goes and he works on this film set, and there's a side story with the police trying to solve this murder, and the deputy is a little person, and it's just fucking hilarious seeing this little dude like running around. You know, you have to see it to know what I'm talking about. It's just really fucking funny, this side story with the police trying to solve who murdered Jason Mewes' father. So Jason Mewes works on this film set, and one day – the cook on this film set thinks the goat's for food, and he murders the goat and makes burritos out of this goat. And Jason Mewes finds out and loses his fucking mind and starts killing everybody on the film set. And that's pretty much it. You know.
What'd you think of it?
Goat burritos?
Nice. Goat burritos.
Goat burritos, man. That sounds a little tasty, I gotta say.
What did I think about it?
Absolutely not tasty at all.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
What did I think about it? There was no practical effects whatsoever. Every kill was CGI, and it looked like asshole.
Oh, really?
Total fucking ass.
Crazy.
It's definitely not a movie that you should sit down and watch and take seriously. It's definitely a film you sit down and have a few drinks and watch with somebody else. You know, it's more of a horror comedy than a straight up horror film. You know,
I'd say.
Well, yeah, go burritos.
Yeah, you know, that's funny. We'll watch it when you come, Moods, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Were you disappointed that Jay didn't talk?
Just a little bit. I was watching this. You know, it's like the first movie I've watched since he got sober. Yes, Moods, I know I have to watch Todd and the Book of Evil. I know.
Did you see Feast?
Feast? No.
Yeah, he's only in it. You've never seen Feast.
I have it. I think.
Oh, check it out. The first Feast is really good.
I think he was still on drugs at that point.
Man, there's some funny ass fucking parts in that movie, man.
Yeah.
In Feast? Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I was kind of pissed off. It's like, this is the first movie I watched since he's been sober. And I was like, he doesn't fucking say one word. What the fuck is this shit? Why am I watching this? But
that heroin's a hell of a drug, dude.
But it's okay. It's definitely not something you should like run out and buy. But if you can find it for like nothing, I guess pick it up and give it a watch. It's funny. I gave it like a 5 out of 10. It's just average. It's just average.
Well,
yeah, didn't blow my nut or anything like that on that one.
I believe I am next, correct?
Yep.
All right, let's see here. I watched, this is, I believe, my last one before my pick of the week. I watched The Collector from 2009. This is my first watch of this film. I've always heard about it. So basically, there's this guy who is doing, I forget exactly what he's doing, but he's doing some kind of work on a house for some people. He's kind of scoping it out because he plans on, you know, robbing it later. We're introduced a little bit to like who he is and his like life story, backstory, basically. But it's kind of, they don't go into it too much, which I like. You just get the overall sense of like what's going on with this guy, and then you're thrust into this story, this, you know, scenario, pretty much. So he decides to go back to this house. He was introduced to the family. We are introduced to the family earlier. They're supposed to go on a vacation or somewhere, and he breaks into this house. And as he's in there, somebody else enters the house. And long story short, there's some fucking crazy shit going on in this house that he did not expect. There's like this dude who's like putting traps everywhere, very like saw-like traps, you know, bear traps and booby traps and all kind of stuff like that.
Booby trap?
That's what I said. I said booby trap.
Booby trap.
All right. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of a, yeah, there's really not a whole lot of story to tell in this one. There's also the, you know, there's reveals and stuff like that. I don't want to say too much. I'm sure both of you guys have seen The Collector.
Yep.
I
love those films. They're really good.
They had good kills in it, man.
I thought the kills were
fantastic. One of the things that there are some problems with it that I see that kind of bug me in films like this, but overall, I was kind of, there's a few things. I'll get to the things that I don't like first. There's a few things, like the way that this house, obviously it's a big house, but it's not a mansion. So I kind of have a problem with the guy being able to sneak around like everywhere without the other guy hearing him. And it's like this huge like avoiding each other thing that I just don't think works. Now, they did have thunder that was supposed to kind of block out the sounds of people walking and stuff, but you're gonna run into each other. You're gonna like be making noise. I just don't see that happening.
Oh my god, why are you fucking overthinking this shit again? You
I didn't really think that was an overthink. That's pretty.
But who cares? It's a movie. Why does it have to be a key plot in the film? But why does it have to be realistic?
Because it doesn't have to be. But this film's set up like a realistic film. So if you're gonna set your film up realistic, you have to cover all the bases. It's just part of filmmaking. And I think that another problem is it kind of has this typical moment where the character does, you know, get out of the house, but he has to go back. You know, like that moment. I just hate those moments in film. It felt very, you know, traditional in the sense of playing by all the
regular
rules.
Run,
Which I just think, like, why not call the cops? Like, why not go run and call the cops? Why go back? Like, why not take a stick or something with you? Like, yeah. You're going back in there. There's just minor problems. These are minor problems. They're not, like, big things. I still very much like the film. I'd love the strongest point is just, like, the craziness of everything, but it's also kind of a negative, too, because how did this guy set up all this shit? It's really complex, you know, and it's just like the Saw films. Like it's just unrealistically complex with the amount of, you know, planning and getting in there and doing all that shit it would take. But I really did enjoy this one. I thought it was shot really well. There's a lot of scenes where it'll kind of the camera will like go above the wall and, you know, transition to the other room and stuff. I love that stuff. It's very just smooth and flowing. But overall, you know, I really did enjoy The Collector. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah, it's a fun film.
And I actually really like the ending too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a good bit, actually. I was expecting it to not be what it was, and I really liked how it ended. I'm interested in seeing the collection. I saw the Blu-ray for $10 up Walmart the other day. I should have grabbed it.
$10?
Yeah.
Don't be paying that shit. You can get it cheaper than that.
You can get it cheaper for that. I might get it a little cheaper, but I'll at least have it that day when I want
it. I saw it for $1.50. I'll grab it for the next time I see it.
The fucking acid, dude. The acid with the cat was fucking so funny to me. This cat gets like stuck in this sticky acid stuff, and then it gets like decapitated. And I don't like cats, so it really didn't bother me. If it was a dog, it would have been sad.
All right. Another film I watched this week. I'm going to talk about this one. I've watched a lot of other films I probably could talk about instead of this one, but I just wanted to talk about this one because generally when Scream Factory puts out something, I like to talk about it on here. And that is from 1982, the Scream Factory Blu-ray release of The Slumber Party Massacre.
Nice.
I mean, you know, the storyline or the plot of this film, you know, it's funny. It doesn't really even have, you know, like a plot. There's basically no motive for the, you know, the killings in this film and stuff. But it's basically about a bunch of, I think, basketball teammates and stuff. They head to this girl's house, you know, for some partying, some food and drinks and stuff. And then, of course, this escaped, I guess, killer from the insane asylum. I guess that's kind of the backstory to it. Shows up at this place and then starts picking off these girls one by one and some of their guy friends also. I've always been a really big fan of this film. There's really no story to it. Like, you don't even know why this guy's doing this shit.
It really
and
is an 80s slasher.
This core. One, it just doesn't have any motive to it. Like, there's no motive and stuff. I always, when I think of this film, I always think of Final Exam too, because Final Exam basically has the killer in that film has no motive for what he's doing at all. So I kind of lumped that into the, but this film is a very fun film, directed by Amy Jones, which I always thought was so interesting that a female directed this film.
I find it pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah.
It's really neat. There's not, can you think of any other 80s slashes like that? I mean,
not off the top of my head, but yeah, I just, I always found it kind of interesting because this movie at times feels kind of you know, like an exploitation film at times, because there's a lot of fucking nudity in this movie.
The shower scene is something that I remember from my like childhood. Like, just the beginning of the film. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of 80s muffs and, you know, titties in this film. It's just crazy considering, you know, a female actually directed this film and stuff. But no, it's fun. It's a fun film. I really have always enjoyed the kind of unrealistic, you know, device that the killer uses. You know, his huge ass drill that he uses. Because, I mean, theoretically...
Phallic symbol, man. Come on.
I mean, theoretically...
Yeah,
I mean,
everybody talks about that.
If you want to, you know, kind of overanalyze things, here's one for you. It's always kind of bugged me in the film that, you know, he's using this massive power drill and stuff. And, you know, the batteries back in the early 80s weren't the greatest. You know, I'm sure, like, after a couple kills...
Now
and stuff,
who's overthinking the films?
But honestly, think about it. You know, like, we all know power drills. Like, I mean, come on. These things are going to be fucking dying on him. He's never charging this thing. Of course he isn't charging it. Fuck. But no, it's just one kind of aspect.
Maybe
of it
takes no legs.
Really funny if he's walking around with a cord, with long-ass extension cord. Like, he
There's actually a funny scene in the film when the, what's her name? She's in her shed or whatever, and she's trying to find a tool to, you know, defend herself against this killer. And she finds that fucking power saw, and she starts running out of the fucking, out of the shed or whatever. And it's plugged in. It's plugged into the wall. And she's like, and she's running, and all of a sudden, of course, it unplugs itself, and then it dies. But I just, fuck, that whole scene makes me laugh every time.
Maybe he carries double A's in his back pocket.
Yeah. I know. It's just,
A's, man.
Totally. Like, this thing is like it's like an industrial-size power drill, man. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know,
then
another
you have
aspect
the classic
of this
cover, which is like used over and over and over again in other film, on other film posters.
Yes. Yeah. It's just a really fun, campy slasher. I mean, like I said, there's no storyline to this film. The transfer that I was getting to that. This movie looks beautiful, man.
I've seen
it in
35 millimeter and it looks like total asshole. So I'm curious to see.
Yeah.
Well, that was your little backstory. Seriously. Originally, when they did the, you know, first set with the three films, people asked, like, why don't you do Blu-ray? And they're like, oh, it's, you can't clean this up to do Blu-ray. Since then, they've actually, you know, found whatever other means to do this. But that's why that's if anybody remembers that happening, that's why there's a Blu-ray now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the opening, basically the opening scenes in the film, like, you can see the grain, like, actually on the film.
Yeah,
you know, like when you're looking at the TV or at your TV screen, you can see that shit, but that's actually like on the film and stuff. That goes away real quick, though, man.
See, the print I saw was tinted red, so the whole fucking movie was tinted red. It was so annoying, but
oh wow, crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they definitely did a really good job with this throughout the film, and it's it doesn't have a lot of flaws. Like, the transfer is beautiful. It has a little bit of film grain, but it's, you know, that bright film grain. It looks really well. It looks really good.
Cool.
Definitely can't say anything bad about the transfer and stuff. One thing I did notice rewatching this film again is this movie has a lot of mistakes in it. Like, just very, you know, just kind of minor things that don't really matter. You know, things like the scene where, you know, the girl drills the hole through the door and there's a fucking, you know, she's making she's putting in that eye peephole thing. Right, she drills the hole in the thing, and the next scene it's actually in the door and stuff. But there's a lot of fucked up things in this film.
Kind of nudity issues.
Not nudity issues, but
kind of nudity.
Like, oh yeah, yeah, and totally, and like placement of certain things and stuff. And next scene will be over here, and like I kept noticing things when I was watching this film. I was like, holy crap, man, there's a lot of mistakes in this film.
Bad filmmaking.
But to be honest, it doesn't even matter. It's a silly, campy, fun film. I do recommend the Blu-ray. It looks really good.
Would you like to see Part 2 put out on Blu-ray? Part 2 is such a weird one, man.
Part 2 is like, I've always said it has to be one of the most bizarre slasher films. Like, I've always kind of classified it as like a supernatural rock.
It's short, too. It's like 73 minutes or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, this, you know, the original Slumber Party Massacre is only 77 minutes.
Yeah.
It's really short, actually, and it feels short. Like, when you're watching, it just rips by. But yeah, the second one's like a supernatural slasher rockabilly sing-along fucking... It has, like, so many weird elements to it. Ugh, fucking movie, man. So bizarre. But
The trilogy is not a great trilogy, in my opinion.
No, but you know what? To be honest, like...
What do you expect?
I find myself watching the third one more than the second one. Like, I've popped in the third one just randomly before and watched it.
I've seen the first one a couple times. I've only seen the second and third one, like, once each.
Mm. Yeah, it's not the best trilogy in the world, that's for sure. But I do recommend this.
Rating?
Rate this. The Slumber Party Massacre, I'd probably give it like 7.5 out of 10.
Like it's been a while since I've seen it, probably since like 2011 or maybe 12. But if I was going back, I think I probably would have rated it like a 6, 6.5.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something, it just has a lot of charm to it. You know, it's just, like I said, I've always been kind of blown away by how much nudity is in this film, considering it was made by a female, but I don't know.
Wasn't she like a feminist too or something?
Well, yeah, I think the movie was actually kind of a statement. I think that's what her.
Yeah, because the guys got it way worse than the girls and shit or something.
Yeah,
something
exactly.
Like my rating might be higher now. Who knows? I'm just going off of my memory of the film. It's been so long.
I always forget that this movie's so old, like that it came out in 1982. For some weird reason, I always think that this movie came out in 1984. But it's the year that Silent Night, Deadly Night came out. And I don't know what it is about that, but I always think Silent Night, Deadly Night came out in 82 and this one in 84. Mm-hmm. No idea why I always mix that up, but it's so weird. It's just 1982, you know, we're in the golden era of slashers. You got Slumber Party Massacre. Check it out. It's awesome.
You know that shit sold well in the video stores.
Oh, fuck, man. That's a great title for a film, The Slumber Party Massacre.
The poster, it was just, you know, it's that time where, like, that shit mattered. The name, the title, I believe that's how the film was even created, was they just had a bunch of titles on the board, like on a whiteboard and or a chalkboard, and the woman just picked one that directed it. I remember hearing that. Check the bonus features on that. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened.
Yeah, I've yet to watch. I mean, I've watched the I have the original Shout Factory triple feature.
Yeah, that's what I have.
There is a documentary, but I think it's actually in parts, and it talks about all three films. I think this might be basically a third of that documentary, like The Sleepless Nights, The Making of Slumber Party Massacre. I think that is part of that set. But it has the other ones on there too. I believe. Have you watched it before?
Who, me? The documentaries and stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I watched all the special features on that set. But it, like I said, it's been so long. So when did that set come out?
2010 or something like that, or.
Yeah, so it was like a year. It was like 2011 or something. I watched that. I haven't even opened that DVD since then. It's pretty crazy. I need to get back on that.
I did watch the making or the documentary thing on there, but I watched it when I first came out. I can't even remember it. So I'm going to have to check this out again. So,
all right.
Yep. Slumber Party Massacre.
All right. I got one more. My last one. It's a 2012 documentary released by IFC Midnight called My Amityville Horror. This is a documentary following Daniel Lutz, who is the son of George and Catherine, who is, of course, the Amityville family. And
the second family.
The second family. Well, okay, the second family that bought the house after the murder.
Yeah, always find the murder story way more intriguing.
Yeah. So this is, like, the first time, like, anybody's talked to this guy since he pretty much left in 1975. I think it's, like, the first time he's ever done an interview with anybody. So I got to give it interesting points of actually convincing him to sit down and tell a story about what happened. So the documentary basically starts with the start of the incident and his experiences, you know, his experience of what really happened in the Amityville house. And, you know, it's to each his own to believe if what he's saying is actually fact, or what he's saying, you know, is, you know, made up in his mind, you know, over time, you know, people, you know, that's why in courtrooms, you know, you really can't believe what anybody says. So, you know, if he exaggerated some things and stuff like that, but, this guy's definitely a little bit fucking crazy. He left the family when he was like 13, and he lived in his own in the middle of the desert by himself.
I heard he had a lot of problems with the father, stepfather.
Yeah, he really, really, really hated his stepfather. And throughout the documentary, he was talking about how happy he was that he died and all this kind of stuff.
Holy shit!
Yeah, you could obviously tell that this guy absolutely hated this dude. And a lot of people say that it was him that actually caused these spirits to get pissed off, because everyone was saying he was a Satanist and all this kind of stuff. Like, he had a whole bunch of books on cults, and he pissed off the spirits that were in the Amityville house. And that's why, you know, they did what they did.
So this guy believes that this all happened, right?
Yeah, yeah. He believed, like, he talked about the window scene and him getting his hands smashed by the windows, but they were magically, you know, healed, which, you know, is, you know, this is one aspect of the story that makes me go, like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Because it's like, if your hands get smushed like that and then, you know, all of a sudden they're back to normal, you know, 10 minutes later downstairs, you know, well, it kind of like, actually, you know.
What, really quickly, what, like, do you guys believe in this story? Because I don't, there's actually a lot of inconsistencies with this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, five people have bought that house since the Lutz has moved out of it, and it's like nobody's had problems since then. And, you know, we hear about this all the time, you know, ghost spirits, you know, latch on to people, and I believe in that stuff, but it's like, why hasn't nobody else had any problems in that house since, you know, since the incidents? And, you know, like, everyone's saying, like, the fly incident was actually not true, and you know, it's like, how could, like, the story is upstairs in one of the rooms, there was like 500 flies, and he went downstairs to tell his mom that there's, you know, 500 dead flies upstairs, and they went back upstairs and all the flies were gone. It's like, it's like, I don't think spirits could, like, cause like that. I think, like, it was all, like, in his head that he was seeing these type of things because, you know, the way his family, you know, was talking about kind of stuff, that it made him think that he was seeing things that he really wasn't and all that kind of stuff. But
I think this, as a kid, he was just really susceptible to the manipulation of the father, the stepfather. And I think the whole thing really is a lot to do with the stepfather. Just there's a lot of, like, if you actually go and do some, like, you know, research about it and stuff, there's a lot of connections between the guy who wrote the book and the you know, Lutz guy, and just a lot of inconsistencies and different stories and just wrong things all together. It's still an interesting, because there's still, you know, creepy shit that happened before that.
Yeah,
know,
it's an interesting documentary. It's definitely better than Room 237. I know a lot of people are going to hate me for saying that, but it's definitely done very well. And there's a whole segment with Lorraine Warren in her house, like 20 minutes of them talking to her. And it's just really interesting because, you know, she's a pretty hot figure lately with The Conjuring and all that kind of stuff. So actually, like, seeing her inside her house and you see the, like, the doll from The Conjuring in the background and, like, all of her, like, you know, voodoo stuff that she's collected over the days.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite segment of the entire thing, you know, her segment in her house and seeing all the stuff that The Conjuring's based off of and seeing that it was, you know, it's actually true.
From what I hear, this film's more about just seeing this guy and how fucked up he got over all these.
He's so fucked up, and, like, from people, like, not leaving him alone. It's like, just leave the guy fucking alone. No wonder why he's fucking crazy, because no one wants to leave him alone. You know, everyone just knows him as the Amityville guy. So I could see how that could cause, you know.
Yeah, that kid probably had a rough life, man.
Yeah, well, that's why he left when he was 13 years old. You know, but
sounds like it's interesting.
It's an interesting
documentary.
Yeah, I'm
definitely interested to check that out.
It's released by IFC Midnight, so, you know, they usually put out quality stuff.
Even though I don't believe in the Amityville case and stuff, to, you know, the Lutz part, I'm always fascinated in learning more about it. I'm like, almost, like, kind of obsessed about the Amity, like, the documentaries and stuff. I love that stuff, man. It's so entertaining to me.
Yeah, it's always, you know, all that type of stuff is fascinating, so I'd definitely check this out.
It's really done.
Yeah, even if you don't really actually even believe, you know, the stories and stuff, it doesn't mean it can't be entertaining, right?
Yeah, it's really well done. And
what about you, Moods? You didn't step in. Do you believe in the Amityville story?
I don't really know what I believe, actually. I mean, I believe that there's something happened there. You know, there must have been. But who knows? I mean, like Jeremy said, it could have been, you know, somebody completely losing their shit and, you know, in this all that, you know, who knows? Who really knows? But, you know, I would like to believe that there actually was, you know,
where's the
proof?
Spirits
and in possession and all that type of stuff. That would be actually pretty cool.
Where's the proof?
Yeah. I mean, You know, what do I know? I could be absolutely wrong. I just know, I just based on what I've seen, I used to, I want to believe in it. It's something cool, just like Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
Yes, he is. But, yeah, I mean, care to throw a rating on that shit?
Check it out. Better than Room 237. I'll give it.
Rating is check it out. All right.
7 out of 10.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
Going into my pick of the week, this was actually kind of hard because I really did like The Collector and I was kind of wanted to put that in my pick of the week, but I decided to go with something a little bit more old. And I went with a film from 1979 called Prophecy.
Nice.
This film actually was super fun. It opens up with a, what the hell is he? He's an environmental protection type agent, and he's kind of in the, you know, kind of bad part of the city where the, you know, housing apartments are just, you know, super packed. There's, you know, tons of black people crammed into one little rooms and stuff, and he's investigating a baby who was bitten and, you know, partially eaten by rats. And, you know, it's just real fucked up. And you're like, oh, shit, this is starting kind of hardcore. And he wants to really make change. So somebody offers him some job out in the wilderness, some kind of paper mill, and some Indians living there in this area. They, you know, want the forest, and the paper mill wants the trees, and it's kind of one of those things. So it quickly goes from that to the woods, and it, you know, there's helicopter shots and stuff, and I thought that was a really neat transition because you're in this cramped you know, city, you know, inner city type stuff, and it, and then you just move to this vast open wilderness.
Now are these helicopter shots like the opening Shining scene, or are they like
nowhere near as fucking awesome, but
yeah.
You know, definitely cool. And basically, once he gets there, there's this really stupid scene. There's one kind of like scene that was a little silly where this Indian guy is like fighting this guy who has a chainsaw, the lumberjack. He has a chainsaw and the other dude has an axe, and they get into like a heated battle, and it's like a fucking fight, and it's a little out there. It's a little ridiculous. But the eventually, once they get in there, he starts doing his investigation. He's there with his wife. They're in a little cabin. He's fishing and stuff. As he talks to the Indians, he realizes, you know, something is up with this place. The Indians take him up to this pond where they pull a tadpole out of the pond, and it's like as big as like a full grown bullfrog or something, like a giant ass frog, bigger than that even. And it's a tadpole, and like something is making things grow like bigger up there. It is just a creature feature. There's like this weird, like, fucking crazy looking creature that is it actually looks pretty good. It's all practical, obviously, 1979. It's like a bear, like I don't even know what it is. Like, it's really weird.
Yeah, it's like a huge kind of mutant type bear type deal.
Oh, you know, so you've little seen this?
Actually, no, I've actually never seen Prophecy before.
Really?
Yeah, I've never actually seen it before.
Surprise.
I do have like a quick little tidbit. The guy that plays the mutant bear in that film, he's the same guy that actually is the predator.
Really?
Yeah,
that's cool. What, one thing about this bear thing is they really, really do well at like making it look gigantic, like tall. And I was like really impressed with that because a lot of times I always want these creatures to be like tall, not just like big and wide, but like really towering. And this one is tall.
Yeah, well, that guy is like about 6'8 in real life, or 6'9.
Yeah, and I think they even added some extra.
He's like Tyler Mainhall.
Now it looks bad at certain times. Not, I wouldn't say bad, but you know, it's 79. It's practical effects that you're gonna see some, you know, minor issues with that. But there's this one fucking scene, dude, that. it's a sleeping bag kill, and dare I say it rivals Kane Hodder, man.
That's
funny. Bear just, and this is PG. This film's PG.
Same with Poltergeist, and it scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah. So this bear thing just smacks this person in the sleeping bag, and it just explodes against a tree. It's almost like so. It's almost too ridiculous, but it is awesome. There's this weird live action raccoon attack, and I was like, holy shit! I was actually feeling a little nervous. My heart was going a little fast. I fucking hate raccoons, dude. They scare the shit out of me. I had a bad experience with raccoons in my teen years. And I don't like them. They're just too vicious and crazy. Man, people looked funny in the 70s. this guy has his like glasses like early on. It's just you kind of, it's one of those films that really like kind of showcases what people were looking like in the late 70s early on. It really is just, you know, a really cool film. The paper mill scenes where they shoot in like an actual paper mill, all that stuff looks great. It reminds me of stuff like My Bloody Valentine with the you know, mine, where it really kind of showcases like the mine. That the paper mill, it's not a long scene, but it's really cool. There's good dialogue. I was surprised at how good the dialogue was. I just honestly really, really, it's a fantastic creature feature. If you haven't seen it, it's probably one of my favorites now. I really enjoyed it. There always could be a little bit more with films like this. Like, you maybe want to see a little bit more kills because it is PG, you know. But it's fun, man. There's this weird like baby mutant shit, and it's fucking pretty creepy. Check it out. I gotta feel like $3, dude. New.
Yeah, I actually ordered this not too long ago. I don't know.
And they gave you the Christopher Walken one?
Yeah, I got like that prophecy fucking set. I was like, what the hell is this? It yeah. sucked though, because like I already have all those films anyways. I was like, well, I don't need this. So
yeah,
I kind of got screwed out of that. But it's actually cheap though. You can get it on Amazon for like dirt cheap. So
yeah, I give it an 8 out of 10. And I really did like it's right away when it went from that like cramped inner city to like the open wilderness. I instantly was like, all right, this is more than your average, just, you know, late 70s, you know, horror film. It's something a little better.
Awesome. I got to get my hands on that.
You'll like it. Awesome. There's no features. Way you won't like it.
Yeah, it sounds right up my alley. I mean, that sleeping bag scene alone just, you know, sounds like it's worth the pickup for that.
It is.
I mean,
I think of Friday the 13th whenever I think of sleeping bags.
I mean, it's like gory or bloody or anything, but it's just fucking funny, man.
That's so funny.
It's just surprising. You're like, oh, shit.
It's awesome stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, my pick of the week is, I guess, a 2014 release.
Whoa.
And that is Dustin Mills' brand new film, Kill That Bitch. This is, oh, fuck. It's a very intriguing, interesting film with one of the coolest fucking endings that I've seen in a long fucking time. It is kind of ironic, you know, that we were talking about our favorite endings and stuff. But, you know, and this one just has a really, really amazing film or ending to the film. This is a hard movie to talk about because you can't really say anything, you know, because you don't want to ruin anything. But it basically, this movie starts, it gets right into it. Right off the bat, you see this guy, he's, you know, dressed, this guy, he's dressed up in this really fucked up mask and stuff. And he's basically killing this girl, torturing and killing this girl and stuff. And, throughout the film, you learn that these five girls are all kind of connected somehow, that he's going around and picking off one by one. So you start to learn things that, you know, all these girls are connected, but you don't know why they're connected with each other and why he's, you know, taking these girls out one by one, what his motive is and stuff. Yeah, it's phenomenal, man. So like when he starts killing girls and, you know, torturing them stuff, he'll send like a text message from like that girl's phone to like the next girl and basically saying, you know, this girl's dead, you're next, kind of thing. And so you kind of follow, you know, that's what's going on throughout the film. And then it just has, you know, a crazy fucking twist ending, which I just can't say anything about. It's just fucking brilliant. This is an amazingly shot film. Dustin Mills' cinematography in this film is outstanding. I really, really like how he did every scene in this film. The lighting is fantastic in this film. The gore is fucking awesome. The girls that he used in the film, all the girls are very beautiful. It's kind of funny. The girls are kind of scantily clad a little bit, you know, like they, some of the girls aren't wearing, you know, the biggest shirts and stuff. And there's this one girl and she's fucking naked throughout the whole film. It's so bizarre. It's just so bizarre. But like the way he shoots these scenes and the girls that he used are all so beautiful. And the way it all ties in together and stuff is just amazingly done. It's a really, really well-made film. It's short. It's very short. It only runs about 65 minutes, I would say. But there isn't a dull moment because it literally starts. Like the movie, you press play and it's just right into the film, man. And you're like, man, holy shit.
It was,
and
what, 65 minutes?
Yeah, it's just a huge mystery. And then the ending happens. And then even the way he shot the whole end of the film and the way he did the credits and everything, it's fucking very creative, very creative. I give him full credit for this, man. It's one of his, you know, Dustin Mills just keeps kind of growing as a filmmaker. And he I know when he made this film, he told people that he's going to try something completely different and stuff. And this film really sticks out in his catalog, man. It's really, really fucking well done. I know at first it wasn't getting good reviews because, you know, people were kind of maybe a little confused and stuff. I have read a lot of positive reviews now. I think people are starting to understand that it was meant to be a lot different than his other films and stuff. And but I couldn't recommend this movie enough. Like, seriously, pick this up. It's fantastic. You know, I probably could have done with, you know, maybe being a little longer. But at the same time, like I said, there's not a minute of downtime in this film. It's just, you're trying to figure out things and it's the whole mystery and it leads up into the end. It's a great payoff. It's basically what I'm trying to say. It's a great payoff. And the thing that I just loved about the movie is the way it was shot. He is really becoming quite the filmmaker with his lighting and his camera techniques and his certain angles that he's using and stuff. And it's an awesome watch. So
yeah, I always, always cannot stress enough about the running time of films. If it doesn't need to be 90 minutes, don't make it 90 minutes. It doesn't have to be. I'm so tired of people thinking that it has to be 90 minutes.
Yeah.
There's so many times I'm sitting through films and I'm like, this would have been a quality film if you would have just cut out 10 minutes of stuff we don't need. I think it also comes down to people. It's like their baby and they just don't want to lose any of it. Yeah. But come on, man. You got to get somebody else to judge it and be like, yo, I think you need to, you know, cut this down a bit. Like,
yeah,
you got to make those decisions.
Totally. And that's what I respect about Dustin Mills. You know, he didn't use any, you know, footage that doesn't need to be there at all. You know what I'm saying? Every scene has a point. You know, every scene has a major point in the film. And like I said, it's, you know, it's worth it because the payoff is awesome. And I respect that, though. You can make a film 65 minutes long and just be, you know, that's my movie kind of thing. I really
need to get on watching one of these guys' things because you keep talking about him.
Yeah, he's just, fuck, man. Really, really talented filmmaker. And I'm really looking for his new project too. So just pre-ordered that. And but yeah, I can't stress enough how fun this film is. Like, it's so intriguing in the way he did it and stuff, and the payoff. It's all about the payoff, man. It's awesome. If I had to rate this one, I'm probably gonna give it probably 9 out of 10.
Whoa. All right. Yeah. Did I rate Prophecy? If not, I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, you did. I mean, it's just such a great film. People, check it out. Support Dustin Mills and kill that bitch. It's awesome. Yeah.
Cool title.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, like I said, you know, once you watch the film and stuff, and I just wish you could talk about it more. I wish you guys had seen it so we could actually like just talk about it off the air. But pretty cool.
Well, when's Dustin Mills' new film come out?
I believe it comes out at the end of April.
You want to do an episode on it?
On his new film?
He cranks it out.
Yeah, he's a fucking busy dude, man. Like, seriously.
Yeah, that's I honestly have been thinking that and just never said it. I was like, it just seems like this guy's always making movies.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Yeah, so the new film, I believe, comes out April 28th. Don't quote me on that, but it's called Her Name Was Torment. And you can actually pre-order for like really cheap. I think the DVD, there's two different covers for the DVD. I think it's only $9.99 for the pre-orders right now. So
everyone buy the titty version.
Yeah, it's. Everyone I think it's.
By the titty edition.
I think it's actually sold out, though.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah, the pre-orders, because I know there was a pre-order with that version with the titties, and it's like a replica of the mask and stuff. And then there was another version, just the titties. That one sold out totally. But the other the other edition is not sold out, and it's only $9.99. So definitely support that.
Are these pressed or are they DVD-R's moods?
Some of his films are actually pressed, the ones that were released by what fucking company? VD or shit, I can't remember. These ones right here, Kill That Bitch, is actually DVD-R. It doesn't bother me one bit, though, because it's an independent film.
Yeah. I don't get mad about it if they're independent, but I was just curious.
Some of his films actually are pressed up, like the ones that were released by VD Visual or whatever, or the fucking company.
Mm-hmm.
We get what you're saying.
Yeah, but anyways, but these ones are like, yeah, this is like super independent.
Maybe awesome. Maybe we'll have to cover one of his films. But very cool stuff. Where all three of us can talk about it.
You know, I mean, this DVD even has an insert and stuff with it. It's fucking cool, man. Very cool stuff. So
sounds cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't have a. I talked about my three movies. So.
Oh, I thought you was gonna. I thought with. So which one of them would be your void of the week? Both of them?
All of them.
Okay.
Nothing. ball busting this week. They were all pretty shitty. So.
That's funny.
Seemed like we're right on track. 2 hours and 5 minutes. Let's get into our review of Eaten Alive. JP, as always, you want to do the privileges of
explaining. Am I like the.
Yep.
You are the synopsis guy now. you're the official synopsis guy. Yeah. Go for it.
We have this guy named what was his name? Judd. I believe it's Judd. This film was made by Tobe Hooper, directed.
Second film.
Yeah, his name is Judd.
I don't think it was actually his second film. I think it's like his fourth film.
Fourth film? I always thought of it as
his
second.
He had something
movie.
Before Texas Chainsaw. But okay. Yes, so Tobe Hooper, 1977, Eaten Alive. This film is about a guy who runs a dilapidated hotel in, I think it's Texas, actually, where they are.
I believe so, yeah.
He has this weird swamp outside of his hotel that also has a crocodile in, it's kind of like his pet, in this, kind of fenced-in area in the swamp. It's a kind of a really simple story. At first, we have a prostitute from the local prostitution house. I think there's a name for those, but I can't remember.
Brothels.
Brothel. There you go. Thanks for that. Who shows up at his hotel, and right away we kind of see that this guy's like completely crazy because he just once he finds out she's from the brothel. He murders her. And then throughout the night, we kind of just have him getting more crazy as people show up and come in and out of his little motel, I would call it.
Yeah, you have like this father and daughter show up, and the father's looking for his other daughter and shit like that. And then
it's, Marilyn Burns and her husband shows up.
Yeah.
There's a little girl. I believe, wasn't she in, I want to say she was in Halloween.
I think she actually was.
What's her name?
I don't know. It's a little girl. I mean, it's a very simple story. It really is. There's not a whole, there's not really a, strong, narrative, that's going on. I mean, it's just a bunch of random things. You're kind of just watching this guy's night unfold.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird because it's almost like you have this like crocodile thing going on, which almost feels like it should have been like more part of like the main story. Like even like the title and just the wording is like I always thought it was going to be more about the crocodile, but it's really not. It's kind of about this Judd guy who. Yeah. We don't really know a lot about. I want to say that he was in a war. He was in one of the wars, like World War II or something, probably.
Yeah, I think they talk about that. He was a he was in Vietnam.
World War II. That made me laugh so hard inside.
Why?
Yeah, I think he was from Vietnam actually.
Because
so he was just out of.
This was made in the 1980s, and he's not that.
It was
old,
made in the 70s.
Yeah.
70 what?
77.
Yeah, he would not be that young if he was in World War II. Sorry, JP.
How old is he? I get he's pretty old, man. He seems really old to me. He seems like an old-ass grandpa.
No, he seems, I don't know, man. He seems maybe he's around 50, but I think that they basically say that he was part of NAM, which I guess he would have been a little older because Vietnam technically just kind of ended a couple years before.
Well, I seen a Nazi flag.
So, yeah, yeah.
In the house, so I just assumed. I'm not incredibly good with times.
Oh, I'm just busting history. Your balls, JP. You know that.
But okay.
You know that's what I do. You know that's what I do.
Neville, the guy's name is like Neville Brand or something like that.
Yeah, and I think he was pretty nuts.
Yeah, like, I think he pulled the character off really well, man.
When did World War II end, by the way?
1945.
Okay, so this Neville Brand guy was born in 1920.
Yeah, he could have been World War II.
All right.
So fuck off.
Jamie, yeah, so, I'm just fucking with
you. Oh, wow. So, like, by 1977, he was, like, 57 in this film. It's crazy.
Yeah, see, I told you.
But, yeah, like, the character is fucking – he's nuts, man.
Dude, he reminds me of, like, people. Like, I've had experiences with people like this who would just, like, say things. Like, they're just saying, babbling on about stuff that I don't even know what the hell he's saying half the time. Like, he really is just, like, babbling. It's kind of crazy.
And it's basically, you know, just his kind of descent into darkness, man. He just kind of starts man, the scene where he's fucking stabbing the one chick, I guess he's is it with the pitchfork? Like he's got the pitchfork in his hand at that
time. It's like a scythe or something.
Or scythe or something like that. But like the way he's the anger in his face when he cocks that thing back and he starts stabbing her in the chest, like it looks pretty real. Like it's just fucking pulling the character off really well. Like it looks vicious. That kills vicious because he basically cuts her up like or stabs her like how many times in that scene? Like fucking five or six times.
The image of this guy running around with the scythe is. Just madman. It's a complete madman.
Yeah, I fucking love it, man. That scene is just terrifying because, you know, one thing I love about this film is the atmosphere. I love the sets that they made.
That's the strongest point of this film. It is. Yeah. It's all a set, I believe, isn't it?
It is totally just a set. Yeah,
and like, it has this mood that I find completely striking, and it's honestly one of the strongest like sets that I've ever even seen in a film.
Yeah, it works so well, like, all shot at night, and it has, like, perfect lighting. You know, have you noticed the lighting, how well it's done lighting, in that film?
And also, it's just the combination of, like, this the sounds of the swamp, you know, crickets and frogs, and the music that's playing in the hotel, or the motel, throughout the whole film. It's just there's constant music. It really sets this tone for where this guy is, and you truly believe that this is, like, outside in some, like, you know, swamp, like, summer night or a cool, warm summer night.
Yeah, it's like literally just a fucking hotel in the middle of fuck nowhere. You know what I'm saying? You know, and it has that kind of like hillbilly fucking music playing and shit. I love that atmosphere, man. It's just so well done.
Yeah,
it's
and so everything's well like kind of dingy and old person looking in the house, but not like new old person looking, like 70s old person looking.
Totally.
And. You know, there's not a whole lot to really talk about this film, and I had this when we brought this one up that we was going to cover it. I really didn't know what I was going to say about it because it's kind of a simple film that, like, the atmosphere thing is really strong to me, but the whole film to me isn't that strong. Like, it's I love that the atmosphere and stuff is so strong, but that's kind of it for me. Besides Robert Englund. Which he looks so fucking young in this film.
Fucking Buck. His famous line, my name is Buck and I like to fuck.
I love Robert Englund in this film.
The fucking line is so funny. You can almost see that
this guy, it's like, you're going to go far, kid. Like, you could just see.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm actually a really big fan of this film. I think that, I mean, I can't stress enough, like, how much atmosphere and, you know, just the way the film was done. It's just, I love that so much. And it doesn't, I mean, the things that are happening in the film don't even have to be that great for me to enjoy the film a lot because, yeah, but I honestly agree.
I reviewed this a while back on my channel, like when I first started YouTube, and I was down on it then, and I like it a lot more now than I did back then. But still, like I said, there's not a whole, like, you can't really go out and say it's like a, it's a fantastic, you know, strong story or anything, but for what it does have, like what we talked about, the atmosphere and stuff, it really is just an experience. And I kind of recommend everybody kind of see this and just like feel it, because you really can just feel it.
Yeah, and we didn't really stress on, you know, the croc and stuff, but the scene where the croc breaks through the fucking the porch railing there or whatever, it just instantly reminded me of like Jaws. Like, you look at that croc and you know it's not real. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's like a few times when it looks really bad, but
yeah,
you're just like, it looks so good at times too, though, man. It really does. It's
that scene, because I think that's the scene where the croc grabs somebody, right? And yeah, it's descending back into the water, and it's just like, you can totally tell that's just all mechanical. It just kind of makes me laugh, but
reminds me of Ed Wood.
Yeah. This guy reminds
me. It's not as bad, but it's funny.
This guy is honestly, I think I remember from watching the behind the scenes stuff that this guy is like actually like a dickhead. Like he was an alcoholic, really hard to work with and stuff. The guy who plays Judd, and it kind of shines through, I think. Did you notice the part where the crocodile eats the poodle or the dog, and yeah. Which is just ridiculous. He's like just instantly like, you know, all like worked up about it, but he's not like apologizing or anything. He's just kind of like defending the crocodile. He's just like, he don't know nothing. It's his natural nature and stuff. I heard they, you know, live forever or something. They were here before dying. He's just babbling on about shit that don't even matter. And it's just awesome.
But I think that's just all part of the character, though, too. I think
That's what I'm saying. It's really well done, crazy. Like, yeah. I don't think it's like, I think that guy's actually crazy.
So basically what you're saying is that the dialogue that he was spitting in the film probably wasn't even written.
Like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's either very, very well performed or just like, it's, you know, he's crazy as shit.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from, because, you know, sometimes that dialogue just can't be written. You know, it's that was just kind of ad-libbed right on the spot. And you're just like, oh, yeah, those, you know, those fucking crocodiles have been around for millions of years, and it's in their nature and blah, blah, blah. And
yeah, like, and he'll just start saying like, dude, something like you got to get it, and I'm going to get it, and you get it good, you get it, or something. I'm like, what? What did you just say? Because I watch with subtitles, you know? So, like, I'm actually seeing these words spelled out to me, and I'm like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Man, one scene I thought was interesting when the father and daughter show up at the place and they get their rooms, maybe a little bit due to the fact that they're not staying in the same room, you know, maybe a room with two double beds or something like that, but he gives them rooms like 7 and 3 or something like that. I'm like, what? So, like, yeah. One of them is, like, all the way down there, and the other one's, like, all the way over here. And I'm like, he didn't have two rooms next to each other. He couldn't have, like, 7 and 8 or something like that. I'm like,
there
what?
Was, like, it always made me kind of laugh. It really is, like, an exploitation-y, like, film, like, with the nudity and stuff.
I mean, yeah. Even Tobe Hooper even said, he was, like, you know, he came to the realization when he was filming the film, he's like, I'm making a grindhouse film, really.
Yeah.
You know,
and it really does feel like one. And I think that's a positive, because...
It does. Yeah, totally, man. It's because it's so fucking dark.
Yeah, it's dark. And even the film, you know, even the, like, the Dark Sky edition, it has all those, you know, flaws in the film, which I like, man.
Yeah, I like that too.
Watching it's definitely enjoyable late at night is just really cool, man. I really like this one as just like, it's the story is not there. We got like, that's just true. But as like, it has so much more to offer than just story that kind of makes up for that.
Yeah, totally.
What do you think, Jeremy?
Once again, the JPM mood segment. I just sit back, listen to you guys shit the breeze.
Well, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on it?
I love the atmosphere. I think it's fantastic. I love motel movies too. Things that take place in old, place in like old motels, like that, and theme parks and abandoned mental hospitals. I just love, and this one definitely lived up to the hype of the set. It's cool that it's a set. You know, it wasn't a real location. Really cool, it was a set. You know, the whole thing was a set. And, everyone's, moods is laughing about the crocodile, you know. You gotta think about the budget that they had. They totally had to do that put somebody in a suit and it would look even more funny.
I think there was a guy in a suit. I think their hands, went up in there.
Yeah.
It's funny because, there's certain elements of, Motel Hell that totally remind me of this film. That they possibly kind of borrowed. Maybe it's that atmosphere, that hotel kind of scene, but I think it's the nighttime scenes. It's just...
Yeah, and the creakiness of the floors and stuff, man.
Yeah, they're very kind of similar in that aspect, And but yeah, you can't deny, though, the way this movie looks.
Did you watch that Arrow release yet, Moods?
Well, yeah. just to but kind of
how was the transfer?
Something.
The transfer is awesome.
Yeah?
Neville Brand actually did serve in World War II.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, that makes sense because
how are you finding all this backstory?
Purple Heart and shit.
Oh, Purple Heart.
No, he's actually talking about the real life person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, because he's actually old. Yeah, he's right at that perfect age, so makes sense.
Interesting.
You guys thought I was crazy.
I didn't think you were crazy. Yeah.
We thought
what?
You were.
I thought I was
crazy, man.
For
judge
a second,
crazy.
I was like, did I really just fuck up this? Like, it's like I really need to learn my history.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a whole lot more to say about it. Do you?
No.
Dude, I absolutely love when he starts tossing bodies into for the gator or for the croc. Yeah. It fucking looks, it's just like toss another one on the fire, kind of thing. But he's like putting bodies, like feeding his pet croc. I don't know.
It just makes me laugh, man. Of the I do like that. It seems like there's more to know about this guy that we just don't know. Like he's saying, like the crocodile came from Africa and like swam down or some shit, which makes like no sense at all. But
yeah, because it just ends up in some random place in Texas.
Like pond, like little swamp or something. Like,
but don't you think that's so intriguing that like the front area of the hotel or the motel is a pond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's so interesting. Like the porch is. And, like, if you fell off the deck or whatever, you'd be in the water. I think that's so weird. It's, like, the setup. I think it's super cool. I think it's just
like, it just
different.
Feels
it's
like
different.
There's
it's so different
everywhere.
Yeah. But, yeah, the sounds are really cool. Like, you can hear the frogs and stuff. Like, it just feels so authentic.
For a low-budget film, man, they nailed that shit. Like, all the different sounds, man, they really nailed that.
Yeah.
So, rating time. Anybody else wants to say anything before we give our ratings?
No, I think we kind of brushed over Robert Englund a bit, but I honestly think his character is really fun.
His character is funny as hell. I like when he picks the fight in the bar for after the police officer basically, kind of gives him shit and stuff. And then like as soon as the cop leaves, he kind of, does his thing. He kind of flips him off a little bit. And then this dude that's playing pool like looks at him and then he just like totally picks a fight with him. He's like, what the fuck you looking at, man? He's like, oh, yeah, we can get serious, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, dude's just like trying to play pool.
Earlier on, there's another guy who starts like fucking with some dude. And that actually annoyed the shit out of me. He's just like, what? Like, just met, like, and I'm like, dude, the moment you pull me up out of my seat, you're getting punched right in the mouth. Because he stuck his chin out, too. And I was like, oh, my God, that guy would have been dead. Fucking dickhead.
He was a dick.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, anyways, ratings.
Yeah, this one an 8. I liked it a lot. Thought it was fun.
Well, my original rating, I did go back and look. My original rating was a 5.
Right?
I went up to a 6.5.
I'm probably going to give it a solid 7.5, probably.
7.5?
Yeah.
You like it like I do?
Yeah, I really enjoy this. I've never had issues with it, man. I just, like I said, it's that the whole setting of this film is just brilliant. I think it's fantastic.
I think the little girl gets on my nerves a lot. Like, there's a lot of screaming in this film. It's really a lot of screaming. And it's not like good screaming, like Texas Chainsaw Original.
Yeah.
Where it's like just blood curdling. It's just like fucking giving you a headache screaming.
Yep.
Sweet. Yeah, so, I mean, that's pretty much it for the review, right?
Yep. So, closing statements.
My closing statement is that if you're listening to this on iTunes, you can always email us if you want to contact us at 22shotsofmoodsandhorror@gmail.com. And you got to watch job, out huh? for those troglodytes. And you know, they do like those goat burritos, from yes. what I hear.
Yes.
No, well, I didn't know if you knew to say that about the iTunes, so I just covered that one.
I'm screwing with you. All right. So, thank you, everybody, for listening to the 14th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. Next week, we will have one more show before a week off, because Moods, of course, coming here for Cinema Wasteland, and next week we'll be reviewing the Vincent Price classics, The Abominable Dr. Fibes and Fibes Rises Again, which are two fun, cheesy Vincent Price films from the late 1960s, and I think Fibes Again came out in the early 70s. Correct me if I'm wrong, but...
I think so, actually.
They're both just, you know, cheesy fun. I really... We'll talk about those next
week. I didn't even know they was cheesy.
They're extremely cheesy. Like, late
60s. I never seen them, but I wasn't expecting cheesy.
Yeah, you'll know what I mean when you watch them. So we'll be doing that. Okay. And then take a week off, and then we'll come back with our usual show again, which I don't know if we're doing a franchise show yet.
No, we're not.
In the month of April, but we'll talk about it next week when we figure it out. So if you guys want to follow us on iTunes, we are now on iTunes, like we talked about last week. So go find us on iTunes if you want to subscribe and get all your our podcasts through iTunes. We are also, of course, on thedevileyes.com and theknowyourhorror.com. So go over there and could watch us over there. Or, of course, you could watch us over at the man himself, Moods' channel. And, yeah. So, thanks again, everybody, for listening to the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. I am your host, Jeremy, a.k.a. NESRuler22. If you want to follow me on my channel, you could do so at youtube.com/NESRuler22. If you want to follow JP, a.k.a. the man who hates Pee Wee Herman, you can follow him on his channel at youtube.com/DoubleShotJ. And if you want to follow the man Moods himself, a.k.a. the man who does not know what a dreidel is, you can follow him at youtube.com/Moods616.
And if you really want to follow me...
At that moment in that video, I didn't, and I realized what it was after. I was like, oh, I'm so stupid. I'm like, what am I doing?
Thanks again, everybody, for listening. I hope everyone has a safe week, and we shall talk to you guys again next week with the 15th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. Can't believe we've been doing this for almost 4 months already. Thanks, everybody, again, for supporting us and listening to our show every week. We shall talk to you guys again next week. So we'll talk to you guys then. See you guys later.
Peace.
Peace out.